Howard from the Sereno Cigar Company studios in North Carolina and broadcasting from Euless, Texas. Welcome to Primetime Special Edition number 63. Tonight, we welcome Emma Victorson of Las Cumbres Tobacco. And in our second segment, Bear and I are going to do a little catching up on some of the industry stuff because it's been a little while since we talked about stuff like that. And as always, Special Edition is sponsored by Perdomo Cigars. Awarded Nicaraguan Cigar of the Year in 2014 by Cigar Journal, the Perdomo 20th Anniversary brand has consistently earned the highest scores in the industry and is a top seller in humidors around the world. The Perdomo 20th Anniversary blend requires tobaccos that have been carefully hand-selected and are well-aged for a minimum of 8 years. The Perdomo 20th Anniversary is offered in three distinct wrappers, a smooth, creamy Ecuadorian Connecticut, a rich, earthy Cuban seed Nicaraguan sun-grown, and a dark, oily Cuban seed Nicaraguan Maduro. Combining these beautifully bourbon barrel-aged wrappers with thick, high-priming binder and filler tobaccos gives each blend a balanced complexity with layers of rich flavors and smooth, elegant aromas. Perdomo Cigars is a family-owned and operated company headquartered in Miami, Florida, with manufacturing and agricultural facilities in Esteli, Nicaragua. Perdomo's highly acclaimed cigar brands include the Perdomo Estate Selección Vintage, the Perdomo Double Age 12-Year Vintage, the Perdomo 20th Anniversary, Perdomo Reserve 10th Anniversary Champagne, Perdomo Habano Bourbon Barrel Age, Perdomo Lot 23, and many more. For great tasting notes and pairing information, check out the new Perdomo website at www.perdomocigars.com. And by Aganorsa Leaf. Great leaf makes great cigars. Aganorsa Leaf stands out because of the distinctive flavor of our Corojo 99 and Criollo 98 seeds cultivated by Cuban agronomists on the best lands in Jalapa and Esteli, Nicaragua. When you smoke one of our JFR Lunatic, Guardian of the Farm, or Casa Fernandez cigars, you'll experience the unique taste and aroma that makes Aganorsa Leaf special. Smoke one today and enjoy the signature flavor of Aganorsa Leaf. And by Regis Cigars. The Latin name Regis denotes of a king. Regis Cigars gives a regal smoking experience to enjoy the handmade king of cigars. Gaius Petronius Arbiter was a Roman writer for Emperor Nero who devoted himself to a life of pleasure. Yet far from being an ordinary, he became known as an accomplished voluptuary. Showing capacity for outrageous indulgence, he was looked upon by Nero to be the absolute authority on questions of taste, a.k.a. Arbiter Elegante, especially with the science of alchemy. In his memory, we bring to you Regis, the alchemy of cultivating and blending the finest aged tobacco to achieve the best possible taste and even burning quality and elegant aromas. Regis invites you to be Arbiter Elegante, the judge of excellence of their beautifully handcrafted and flavorsome creations. These are now available to the discerning palate of U.S. consumers nationwide. Ask your retailer for Regis cigars and become Arbiter Elegante. And by Drew Estate Cigars. Check out and download the Drew Diplomat app for your mobile device. Keep up with everything going on with Drew Estate. Experience the subculture that is the rebirth of cigars. Available on iTunes and Google Play. For more information, check out www.drewdiplomat.com. And Drew Estate is the official sponsor of the live streaming platform of the Primetime shows. Welcome, everybody. This is Primetime Special Edition number 63 for this Tuesday, November
26.
No, wait, hold on.
Oh, how bad 26? Is this? 26. I had it right, 26. For this Tuesday, November 26, 2019, the eve of Thanksgiving Eve. This is Will Cooper. I am in the Sereno Cigar Company studios in North Carolina, and I'm joined cross-country by my friend and colleague, Mr. Bear DuPlessis.
Happy Thanksgiving, Coop.
Well, you know, Bear, do you remember the Thanksgiving Eve show we did last year?
Last year?
Oh, yeah. It was the most memorable show I ever did in my life.
Oh, yes. Yes, I do now. Yes.
That was show.
That was Eve. That's right. I forgot.
That was pre hospitalization. The show I did right before I went in the hospital. Yeah.
Man. That was. But luckily, history did not repeat itself.
So no, but I was freaking out a little because one of my oldest son who lives at home has a terrible cough, and I'm like, keep away from me. I'm like, don't get me sick.
Send him away, man. Just send him away.
He's going up to Toronto to go see, he's been making these trips to Canada. He's got friends up there. He's going up there on Black Friday. He's leaving, actually. So, yeah, he's going away. I'm like, well, you should have left earlier.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That no. doesn't sound right. You want to spend Thanksgiving with him.
Yeah, just not his cough.
Exactly.
But I still have to cook Thanksgiving dinner.
Oh, you do celebrate Thanksgiving dinner in the DR?
No, but Jose is American more than anything. And,
yeah.
And Jasper is all over YouTube. So I have the pressure.
Ah.
But I have cooked it before successfully. They say much spicier.
Right.
Than what an American would be, but close enough.
So hey, while sign me up for spicy Thanksgiving. I'm
so let me ask this question. Thursday. I got to ask this question. So while you're making Thanksgiving dinner, how does Jose like leave you alone, or does he drive you crazy?
Well, Jasper doesn't leave me alone.
Okay.
And I'm going crazy telling Jose take Jasper.
Right, right. Because that was how okay. That's how it was when I was young.
Circus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My wife would throw me out of the kitchen. She'd make me take them, but she'd get mad at me because I'd start like sampling stuff, you know, like and like along the way. That drove her crazy.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah.
I wish my family of three was that organized. Like we are so all over the place. All three of us.
Right.
All three of us with a temper. All three of us loud, and the kitchen is open.
No. All right. So
we'll see what happens.
Exactly. Before we welcome Emma, I just want to mention our sponsor for our big story tonight, and that is Cubanacan Cigars. As long as there have been people, there have been stories, from the stories told in paintings on ancient caves to the family stories shared around the table, stories that make up our history and guide our traditions. Cubanacan Cigars not only embraces tradition, but strives to tell a story in every cigar. The name Cubanacan was chosen for its vibrant history and the story behind its meaning. Cubanacan means where the fertile land is abundant and is derived from the tobacco traditions that predate Cuba itself. The story of Cubanacan is not one of our past, but one that is still being written. Try the cigars that tell the story. The Cubanacan Connecticut, the Cubanacan Habano, and the Cubanacan Maduro. So I want to officially give the welcome now to Emma, Emma Victorson of Las Cumbres Tobacco. Emma, welcome to Primetime.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be with you again. It's been a few years.
Yep, new show now. We have a different show. But so this is a historic show, Emma. We didn't tell you this, right? Bear, should you want to tell her, or should I?
Emma, you have the distinction, the privilege. It is our privilege and it is our honor, but you have the distinction of being the very first female for a full interview on Cigar Coop Primetime.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we had Courtney from Cornelius and Anthony, but she did a very short segment. So you were the first dedicated special guest, female special guest. So congratulations. We were long overdue.
Thank you. Actually, since I was away for almost 3 years, I'm not going to say away completely, but I was away from the States, and meaning that I was away a lot from the cigar industry because I couldn't travel. For personal reasons for a couple of years. And since I came back, there's a lot more women in the industry. So if I'm the first one on this one, well, I'm honored. Thank you. Thank you very much.
We were long overdue. I tried to put an affirmative action program, and it didn't really work, but it wasn't, but we're glad to have you. I know you've been on my old show a couple of times before then, including one time actually live in person. So, but now I have the different show.
I think it was the one live in person. You had to cut it in like three parts.
Yeah.
Yeah. It got kind of long. It was
a lot
of things to talk about. Yeah.
Yeah. That was when you were up in Rhode Island, and we didn't often have guests up there. So it was a big deal when we did get a guest in this. I actually was remote that day, I think, when you were there.
Yeah. No, you weren't there.
Yeah, I wasn't there. I remember that. I remember when we did the interview.
And as we might talk about later, I'm going to be quite far away again, but I will be coming to the States a lot. And if you want me back in there, in the studio, I'm happy to travel.
Well, no problem. we have studios now across the country in various different locations.
Now we're all over the place, yeah.
Right, exactly.
You're in North Carolina, right?
Yep, Bears in Texas, by the way.
Texas. I just came back from Texas, a few couple of days ago.
Saw you got to try some Lockhart barbecue. How did you enjoy that?
I'm sorry, what did you say?
It was Lockhart barbecue, right? You got to sample.
Yes, some... I had a brisket that I ate from paper. Oh my God, it was so good. I mean, it was delicious. I mean, I cut through that brisket with this little plastic fork, forget the knife. I was
that's all you need is that's all you need is a plastic fork.
Yep.
I mean, or your
fantastic.
Hands.
It made me think of that that episode of Young Sheldon when it was all about the brisket.
And I don't think Coop gets the reference, but I do, Emma, so it's fine.
What? I know about one. My wife watches Young Sheldon. I don't, but I do. I don't get the brisket reference, so I'll be honest with you.
Okay, well, some people will.
Okay.
I'm on the same page. I'm
right, right.
My dad, I don't think he managed because, like, he's really, really bad with tech stuff, whatever. I sent him the link. I wrote, just click on it, because my dad's in Thailand. So for him, it's now 9:34 a.m. tomorrow. So I said, if you want to see me live, you can see me live. Maybe he's seeing me live, maybe not. But he does not get the brisket coup.
Okay.
At all. He doesn't know who Sheldon is. He doesn't know who the young Sheldon is. He's like, what's a brisket?
I know who young Sheldon is. My wife watches that show, so I do know, but I don't watch it. So like I at that point I'm clueless.
Mm. Yeah. Now that I was in Texas, yeah. I told my new rep Carter Skinner, who's fantastic, by the way. So I told him to get a Young Sheldon because he's a Big Bang fan. So I was like, you have to see Young Sheldon from the beginning. It'll make you cry. I literally cried to that show.
It's a funny show. I catch flack for liking Big Bang and Young Sheldon, but I enjoy those shows. They're fun.
Yeah.
Nah, it's good.
I'm sorry I took you off.
No, you're going to kick us off.
Completely.
I just want to mention, because Big Vic's out there too, and he was mentioning
it was
how
because of the brisket.
We're enjoying the Freya 12 here, and I'm just like I said,
so
great flavor right out of the gate. Different than the original Freya, that's for sure. Nice, smooth, and creamy right out of here. I'm enjoying this right out of the gate. How about you, Bear?
Absolutely. This is my first time smoking the cigar. Really, like you said, really, really enjoying it. I think there's some really nice creamy notes to it. There's some really nice peppery spice that's really kind of coming through on the retrohale. There's got to be Corojo tobacco in this.
You are good. Yeah.
You can taste that.
Yeah, you get that sweetness off the Corojo. I'm definitely getting
some of that peppery note too that kind of zings through there. Emma's is the wrapper, it's Habano, right? So like what, Ecuadorian maybe?
It's the Habano Ecuador Bravo. Okay. Very good. A lot of people don't see it because it's so dark, but it's because it's a high priming.
Yeah.
It's a high priming Habano Ecuador. That's right. You're absolutely right.
It's kind of got that kind of the it's not quite too, there's toothiness and then there's toothiness when you look at wrappers like Ecuadorian, like a lot of Ecuadorian Habano. When I notice it, it kind of has that that low level toothiness a little bit, kind of a little bit rustic, but still looks very clean and, just beautiful, like beautiful wrapper. This is tasting really good.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy you like it so much. And like you said, the pepper, the spice, especially in the retrohale, that is definitely something that I was going for and that a lot of people feel right off the bat as well. Like I see you do, you're still in the first inch. And like I said, I'm amazed that you saw the wrapper, that you felt the wrapper. A lot of people don't. And they ask me, what wrapper is it? And they start to look at it. They look at it. And I say, don't look at it too much. Smoke first because it's a high priming.
Yeah.
You both know probably. I know Coop, I know Will knows. You both know Señorial, the classic Señorial, very well.
Right.
And that's also Habano Ecuador wrapper.
Right.
But it's much lighter in color.
Yeah, that's true.
Much lighter in color, a little bit less shiny than this one, but that's all because of the priming.
And
the Corojo, you're absolutely right. So it's a Corojo binder. And there's Corojo in the filler. The filler is all Dominican, like the Dominican trio. Corojo, Piloto Cubano, and Criollo 98. So it's a completely different blend from the original Freya. So just to make a direct comparison, the original Freya, would they say the first Freya, is a Dominican Criollo 98 wrapper, a Mexican San Andres binder, and then the filler is Piloto Cubano and Criollo 98, No Corojo, however, there is a leaf of Nicaragua Esteli. So it's a completely different blend. Completely, it's a different cigar.
Wow.
Yeah.
But we didn't want to go with the new name. Like it's Señoriales Jose's and Freya's Emma's. We didn't want to come with a third name. So we came with Freya 12. The 12 has a whole meaning to it. And even if you look, it looks very similar. The Freya 12, it is still the goddess Freya.
Because it's slightly different design though, yeah.
Because it's all about the goddess.
Right.
I mean, marketing wise, you know, and design wise. So if you see, it's the same one, but it's bolder colors. The blue is darker. The gold is goldier. There's a 12, which is very delicate there.
Yep.
But the big difference is when you turn it around. The Viking ships in the back.
Oh, yeah.
Are electric blue.
Yeah.
Whereas the original one, they're blue. It's brown.
It's almost like a Van Gogh painting, man.
Yeah.
That's really...
is a painting. That's the box. That's right. It is a painting. It's a painting made by a Macedonian friend of mine, Jana Jovanova.
It's gorgeous.
Fantastic painter. I love her art. I love it. But as most painters, they can't make a living out of it, you know. Unfortunately, it's not easy to be an oil painter and you live out of that. She's still painting for fun, but what she does now is she makes cakes. I mean, really decorative cakes. I don't know if you've seen on Facebook, Jasper's cakes all through the years has been from her. you know, but except for this year.
Oh, I've seen I've seen the cakes.
Yes, I have.
Yeah, except for this year, which was here. But she made this painting for me. And it's an 80 by 60 centimeters. That's like 80. Could you tell how much that is?
Probably 80 by 60 centimeters is probably like this big. It's probably like a
less than 3 feet.
I was going to say
it's like 2.5 feet by yeah.
Nice.
You get it, yeah. Oil painting, which was we worked on it together. Everything it has to include. Well, of course, Freya, the way she should look like. He has to include. He has to have fire. He has to have a knife. He has to have the falcon wings. He has to have the two little cats. I mean, the cats are supposed to be giants, but they're tiny in this one. The cats are tiny. As we spoke about that before, was because I was like, cats don't sell cigars, you know. So
right.
She managed to get the two cats in there for the dork, so it would tell me where are the cats. So it's the same design, but this one is just bolder and with the blue. It's blue behind it. So I have a lot of fun with these things. If you know me, you know how I like to have fun with these things.
I had fun with that.
Like turn the cigar around, and then you really know it's blue. It's not brown.
Yes. You said the 12 was significant.
Yeah.
What was it? 12 years you were in the business, right?
So when I finalized the blend was in 2016. 2016 was the 12th year that I was technically working in the cigar industry.
Right.
I mean, I was in the tobacco industry through my dad since I was 8, but I can't say that. But then since I was in high school and since I was in college, he would bring me to his conferences when I could to take minutes at the meetings and to learn about the business a little bit. And then after I graduated, I started, the first thing I did was start with cigars, was General Cigars. And, so the 12 years was the 12 years since I was employed by Swedish Match for the premium line.
Right.
And the cigar didn't come out yet because that was the same year as Jose started to work with EPC. I had to go to Macedonia to have a condo there that I had to legalize. And that was a big problem. Not a problem. It was a big thing. There's a lot of corruption. There's a lot of, you know, lawyer work. It took a lot of time, a lot of, there was a lot to be done. So I didn't want it to come out when I was away because I thought that's not nice. And as you might have noticed during those years, I wasn't active on social media either. I didn't want to take selfies of myself smoking. If I can't actually go and see you somewhere, right?
Right, yeah.
I didn't want to do it. I just showed sometimes online that I, you know, that I'm alive, that I'm still in cigars. All the Las Cumbres cigars sold themselves enough to keep us alive. So I'm very, very touched and humbled by that, that we managed to stay above water with no one there at all. So then when I knew I was coming back to this side of the ocean, to America, that's when I said, okay, last year, that's when I said, okay, now I'm going to get out with the Freya 12. And I launched it first in Sweden, and then I launched it in the United States this year. It was out last year, but I launched it myself this year in person.
Yep. Yeah, no, it's...
So the 12 was 2016. And then because of all these things that are non-cigar related happened, you know, like, I mean, Jose went to EPC, I had to go to take care of property in Macedonia, like in back in Europe. All these things happened. Then I say, I want to find another reason for 12. Well, my son was born in 2012.
Ah, yes.
Ah.
So... the 12 for me has both reasons.
It's very good. Very good cigar. I'm enjoying, and it's starting to build up a little in some intensity, but not overpoweringly with strength either. Emma,
yeah, that's what I wanted was, I wanted a medium to full. Some mm-hmm. call it full bodied, some call it medium to full. But yeah, not overpowering, because the same thing as with the first Freya, for me, flavors are more important personally. So I don't want anything to overpower the flavors of the tobaccos.
Totally. I mean, you definitely, there's some nice complexity out of this cigar too that I'm really getting. Yeah.
Coop, one last note before we move on, just since we're talking about the cigar.
Absolutely.
So, Emma, the Vitola has a very particular name too. It's not just a Churchill. You call it the Brisingamen. Excuse me if I'm mispronouncing it. It's the Brisingamen. Brisingamen.
Brisingamen.
Brisingamen. Excuse me. My apologies.
Okay, I think so. Okay. I mean, there could be a Scandinavian. I mean, a real one.
But,
I'm a little bit of a fake Swede. There could be a real one who would tell you that's wrong too.
Fake Swede. That's awesome. No, but the name is significant because it's name. I did a little bit of research into Freya the goddess, and the name Brisingamen is that's the name of her necklace, right? That's where she gets her power from.
That's her main power.
Okay.
Yeah, like all the Norse gods, same as the Roman gods and the Greek gods, all those gods. They have their power in something. Like Thor has the Mjolnir, you know, the hammer.
Yeah.
And if you want to go into the Avengers, yeah, then he also has a Stormbreaker. Okay, I'm not going to get all too geeky. Anyway, but, they have their power. They have, they each have their power. And her power was this necklace, which was made of amber.
Okay.
Yeah, and the amber has a big significance too. So, well, here's a fun thing about the amber, and this is actually very I don't know, it's a coincidence, I guess. Yellow/brown amber, come from tree resin near or from the ocean. I mean, it's always near the ocean or from the ocean, but it comes from the trees actually. And here in the Dominican Republic, and from the Baltic Sea of Northern Europe.
Wow.
So that for me was like, wow. The special Freya 12 has to have that name. I mean, it's made in Dominican Republic. It's the name of this amber, which is actually from, sometimes the amber's here from here, or sometimes from the Baltic Seas, which is which is kind of funny, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Brings it all together for you.
It really does. It really does. So, I mean, I have a lot of fun with that.
I think later
we'll get into the whole Dvalin dwarf thing as well. That's
another. Yeah, well, it's funny because I think I told you, you know, obviously my trip to Stockholm last year, when I was looking for a hotel, you inspired it because I saw a hotel called Phrase. And I'm like, I got to stay here. This is the hotel I got to stay in. And it was a wonderful hotel in downtown Sweden, Stockholm.
I know. And I think it was, I forgot if you asked me first or if I wrote to you before, just about to ask me.
Yeah, I think it was something along, because that trip happened like really fast. I found out like 48 hours beforehand I was going. So it was a very fast trip I had to make. So, but
the name of Frey of the hotel.
Yeah, I asked you if it was, because I picked
you
it.
You asked me, yeah, no, yes, it was you. You asked me first if there's any connection. I said,
yeah.
Frey is Freya's brother.
Mm-hmm, yep. Mm-hmm. And it's, by the way, it's a great hotel if you're in downtown Stockholm, I'll just say that.
Fantastic one. Well, yeah, I know you fell in love with Stockholm.
I know. I did. I really did.
You know more about Stockholm than I do.
I know. No, I can't say that.
Emma, that's actually true.
We were actually talking on Affair 12, and it's a good segue because you have accomplished a lot in this in tobacco and in the cigar industry. So we wanted to go back a little and highlight some of those things that you've done. And we kind of mentioned, how old were you when you actually first smoked a cigar?
The first time I smoked a cigar?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was not a good experience. I was 17. It was a Halloween party, and I was in high school in Budapest, in the American International School of Budapest, ASB. So, like I said, my dad might be watching this, but yes, I was drunk. I mean, we all were, and but I remember it was a Cuban Monte Cristo. That I do. And I was like, yeah, my dad's in tobacco, you know, but you know, yeah, no, of course it was, I mean, for a 17-year-old drinking and, you know, partying, it's not like I was relaxing and thinking about what I was smoking or doing. That was the first time I smoked a cigar. The first time I smoked a cigar, I would say in a serious way, I was probably 21. I was in college, and it was one of the times when my dad, in the summer, during my summer vacation, and my dad had his Eastern Central European conference for Swedish Match, and he had me in there just to sit and listen, take minutes, learn, and then I smoked a Macanudo, and that's when I started to learn how to smoke it.
Right.
Yeah, and then it went from there.
But you were around tobacco all your life there, right?
Well, yeah, without smoking it all my life, yeah.
Baird, you had a couple of questions here, I think. Yeah, I want to give these to you. Yeah.
We've kind of lamented, you know, early on in this, you know, when we first jumped on and kind of early in the interview as well. It's like we're all parents here. We all have children, and you and I are very fortunate to have children around the same age and everything. But growing up in the tobacco industry or cigar industry, and now having children yourself, is there anything that you and Jose do differently than your parents? Than, you know, when it comes to, you know, that, you know, and as far as that relationship, okay, what you do for a living and, you know, obviously raising children.
For Jose, completely different. Because with his first kids, a son and a daughter, born in the 70s and early, or yeah, his daughter was born in the 70s, his son was born in 80. But it was here in Santiago, and his wife was from here in Santiago, and the whole family was here. And he was just traveling and doing his thing, and that did not affect anybody. In my case, it would be more similar to how I grew up. I grew up in like the half south east of France, in Annecy, La Haute-Savoie, which is bordered to Switzerland and close to Italy.
Near Lyon? Were you near Lyon?
Yeah, very near Lyon.
Okay, that's what I'm trying to geographically.
My dad's office was in Lyon, actually. The Swedish Match office was in Lyon, but we lived in Annecy. And my dad was traveling all the time. He was, at that time, he was actually not even with Europe. He was at that time in charge of Latin America, all of South America. And so he was away a lot. And when I was around 8, 9, 10, 11, I'm not sure, we were supposed to live in Rio de Janeiro in Brazil. That's where like his center was. We're supposed to live there. My mom didn't want to. She thought it was beautiful there, but it was safety wise in the 80s for a kid. And she loved France a lot, so much. So she refused to move. So my dad would be away for 3 months at a time and then come back. And that's how it is with me and Jose. But in a different way. My mom wasn't working with tobacco. She had a jewelry store in the town in France. She worked the hours when I was in school, you know, everything normal. But my dad wise, who was, you know, in and out, and if I had a vacation, if I had a holiday from school, we would go to Rio a few times, or my dad would leave us in Miami. And he would travel around Latin America a bit. So Jasper's been growing total, yes. So I'm doing it that way because I work in tobacco as well. And Jose and I have to often be on different continents, me in Europe, him in America, or if we're both in America, but then we have to see who's going to travel. And I have to say that Las Cumbres Tobacco has a CEO who is very much in charge of everything and decides everything about when Emma works or when Emma travels and where Emma travels.
I bet I know who that is.
That CEO is called Jasper.
Yeah.
He at the ripe age of 7. So,
big things coming from this kid.
So for me, it's okay to do it this way because I'm used to it and I grew up that way. For Jose, it's a bit more difficult, I'm balancing it.
Is there anything you wish? I think I already know the answer to this question because I think you alluded to it. Is there anything you wish your father had done differently in sharing his life's work with you as a child?
I will be honest with you, no. As a child, you mean? I'm not talking teenager. I'm not talking, college. You're talking as a child, right?
Yeah, child, early youth. Yeah, we'll go with that. Sure.
Yeah, no. My mom, well, I say was because she died in 2003 from cancer when I was 24. My mom did a fantastic job because I think back to that a lot as a mom now. She did such a fantastic job of keeping me satisfied, of keeping me busy. I didn't have problems moving from country to country, making friends in different countries, new schools. I have to give credit to my mom in heaven for that. Because, I was very happy.
That's wonderful.
That's wonderful. Yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, actually, fun side story. There was a few years in between. I don't know exactly what years. My dad probably would remember more than me. Maybe between the ages of 8 and 11, 9 and 11. I wanted a horse so bad that if my dad, when he drove, if he was from his office in Lyon for the week, when he came home for the weekend, or if it was from his long trips, if he came home and I would watch out the window. And if there was no horse trailer behind him, I did not jump and say, hi, daddy. Because always before that, I would jump on him and be like, hey, papa, you know, so excited, you know. But there was a couple of years in between when I was like, hi. And I walked away. And my dad was not happy about it. And my mom had to explain, well, you know, she wants a horse, you know, if you don't come home with a horse trailer. I finally got a horse when I turned 11. And then I was happy when he came home.
Right, right.
Then we moved to Hungary, to Budapest, when I was turning 14. When I was just starting ninth grade, I was just starting high school. So that's when I transited from French school to American International School. And then it was easy because then the trips were short. You know, they were within the same continent. And he would bring my mom and me a lot. Oh, there was a time he was working in Asia as well. And he would take us there too. Yes, oh my God, yeah, I was 15. We were in Manila and Hong Kong.
I'm like jealous hearing all this because like I didn't
joke
until I was like,
yeah, but I didn't. Yeah. But to ask a bear, I would really thank my mom for me not feeling that I was missing anything.
It's wonderful. So you actually went back to France, right, for college, university?
Yes, I did. I went back to Paris.
So I love asking this question because I think Paris is one of those places that is not just a place necessarily, but it's also, it can also be a way of life. It can also be, there's so many metaphors with that city. It's such a beautiful city and it's been through so much in its history. And for each individual person who experiences Paris, there's always like this unique story to tell. So I always like when people say that they visited Paris or lived in Paris for a time, my favorite question to ask them, you know, and not even cigar related, is what is Paris to you?
Oh my goodness. Paris is so much to me. Okay. Remember, Paris was not special to me because since I was tiny, we went to Paris all the time. We also have friends there. We're still very, very good friends. Like family friends, like my dad's, my dad and him, they are to this day best friends, like daughters? That sounds crazy. Like brothers. my mom and her, they were best friends. The aunt, the father on the father's side, who now lives in California, they were like sisters, super, super close. And they had two sons my age, one year younger, and one daughter 6 years younger than me, 12 years young, and anyway, and we were so tight. They would come to us, so we would go to them. Their grandparents on the father's side lived in the same town as us in the southeastern part of France. So we were going to Paris all the time, a lot. There were school, of course, school trips to there. So Paris was not something new to me when I went there. I had a family on the outskirts, which are these people that I would go to every weekend, actually. It was a home to me. So I did not go there as a foreigner. I love Paris. I absolutely love Paris. Would I want to live there? No, I don't want to live there, but I love it. And I always want to keep the home. Well, we just sold my home there, in my apartment there, because there was no reason to keep it anymore. It was just costing money. But I don't have something special. I mean, for me, it's just, I mean, I grew up with the French culture. I grew up in the cafe culture, which I miss here, which makes it unbearable for me to live here, because here there's no such.
But Lyon, I mean, you were talking about Lyon before, right? Lyon and Paris are really, Lyon's a big city in itself too. Different, very different. when I went to both of them, there was a major cultural change, I thought, with both of them.
Well, this is the beauty of France.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's put it this way. Would I live there? Maybe I will when I'm older. I don't know. But it's not somewhere I would live. My home is actually Balkan, Southeast Europe. It has become that in my adult life. But France, like, okay, French is the only language that I will speak with no accent whatsoever. Like in Swedish, I can't speak Swedish without an accent at all. But I miss vocabulary. I have made up words that don't even exist. Yeah, because when I was a kid, I made up words like they were French, and I just put a Swedish accent to it and a Swedish grammatical ending, and then no one ever corrected me, so I still use them. If I don't know a word, I just put it in English. I speak Swedish, but I can't work in it. Like, I can't write an official letter in it. But I sound perfect. In English, I have some kind of accent. No one knows from where, and I don't know from where. Spanish also. Macedonian also. But French is the only one where I will speak pure. And food. When it's about food, when it's about the basic, let's say the basics of food. I'm not talking about the main dishes. I'm talking about the basics like milk, butter, bread, croissant, like the really the basic. It's the French that I miss, and that what makes me feel home. When I have, like, on TV, like we have two French channels on here. And I put them on, and I just listen to it, and I'm like, I feel home. So it is my home. And so what I would want to say about France is that France is a beautiful, beautiful country in a way that I think no other country. Okay, I might be wrong. I might sound French to say that no other country is like it, because that's what we French are used to say. But it is true. North, south, west, east, middle, it's all different. It's going to be different foods, different smells, different dialects, different culture. So yes, Lyon and Paris are completely different, and so is Marseille, and so is the town Annecy that I grew up in.
Yeah.
And if you go to the middle, in the area of La Touraine, and you go to the main town of La Touraine too, and then, I mean, if you want to go to the northwest,
Brittany,
I mean, it's all different. And then you want to go to the northeast, where it's closer to Germany, closer to Belgium, and it's
Strasbourg. It's all, yeah, I spent a day in Strasbourg, so.
Strasbourg, yeah, you see, yeah.
Yeah, like I said, I was just blown away by the diversity in France when I went.
It's an amazing diversity.
Yeah,
and
Yeah, like I said, a lot of us think Paris, but when you look at that whole country as a whole, there's a lot to offer there.
Yes, it's something that I'm very proud of. We moved there when I was barely four. I mean, so we moved there when I still spoke baby Swedish. My dad was traveling all the time. My mom was Finnish, but she spoke Swedish to me, but she also knew French. And they just put me in French kindergarten, like that. And French immediately became my language. So I ended up speaking French at home. And it wasn't until I was 8 years old that my dad said, okay, this is enough. Emma has to learn Swedish. And I learned Swedish with comic books. Donald Duck and a horse magazine called Min Häst, means my horse. that's why I can't work in Swedish. That's why my vocabulary is limited to Disney. I mean, like, literally, right. You know.
How many languages do you speak, Emma?
Well, I would say five.
Wow.
So, I mean, that's French, Swedish, English, French, Swedish, English, Spanish, Macedonian, a very, very, very rusty, horrible Russian. I don't count it anymore because I forgot it completely, and I have practice in it. But there was a taxi driver in Miami when I was there this summer, and I heard his accent, and I asked him where he's from, and he was from Russia. I'm like, yeah. And we had a conversation in Russian. I'm like, oh my God, I can still keep it up. He was from Siberia.
Right.
I used to speak a little bit of Finnish when I was younger, but, you know, then my mom died. And Finnish is the kind of language that when you lose it. Because unless you know, the only language that really resembles Finnish is Estonian. I don't speak Estonian. I mean, who speaks Estonian? I mean, these are two tiny languages, Finnish and Estonian. If you lose one, when I go to Finland, when I go to Helsinki, sometimes I see these words, and these are long words, and spelling is so weird. It's just, it's a weird, cute, funny language. And I'm thinking, I'm like, I used to know that word. I have no idea what it means, because there is no other language to guide me into it. Whereas Russian, if I forget a word and I see it, Macedonian, though, although it's completely different, it's still within the Slavic group.
Right.
And I can still guess my way into it. I could be wrong or right. Finnish, however, when it's gone, it's gone.
Wow, so, that's amazing. And we're not like talking like Spanish and Italian here. These are like different. You just like four different language groups you just mentioned here. I mean, it's all, that's amazing there. Well, I have trouble with English. I mean. Yeah. Yeah. All right.
That is the beauty of having different, you know, group languages.
Right.
That is actually, I've been very lucky and blessed with that, because these languages I mentioned have not been languages that I've learned, studied. These are languages that I learned in life.
Right.
All of these.
That's good for you. So you spent some time at Swedish Match, or you worked at Swedish Match for a while. What were you doing there?
Well, I grew to become marketing manager for premium cigars for Eastern and Central Europe and the CIS countries, Commonwealth of Independent States. That means Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, all the Stan ones, and Turkmenistan, etc., Georgia, Armenia. Although my main work was Eastern and Central Europe, meaning going from the western side of Russia all the way down to the most southern Eastern European country, which is Macedonia. Under that is Greece and EU, and that was already outside of my mine. I did not start as marketing manager, of course not. I started in, I was not allowed to work for Swedish Match, actually, because my dad was in the management team international. There was six guys sitting there. And anyone related to them was not allowed to work for Swedish Match, which is, I think it's a general rule for a lot of large companies. And it was, I had just finished my second education, because after doing my bachelor's in international business, I did some musical theater. And when I decided that I did not want to do musical theater, I did not want to do showbiz. I'm too sensitive for that. I wanted to go with business and marketing, which is a huge passion of mine. And it was after one of those conferences that my dad took me in. It was his agent in Slovenia, in Croatia back then, Andrej Žaren, who then Swedish Match bought his company. I think now he bought it back. I mean, fantastic, fantastic guy. He was the one who said to me, Emma, I want you to work for me. I was like, yeah, cool. Yeah. I said, well, we're premium cigars. You've learned a lot about them, and you speak some of these languages in Eastern Europe, and you understand more importantly, is that I understand the culture of Eastern Europe, because you cannot go with a Western mentality and just go and work there. It's not, they're going to screw you over. So he wanted me to really learn about premium handmade cigars, travel around in Eastern and Central Europe, and do these seminars that Swedish Match had created. And I said, yeah, awesome, I absolutely want to. And then my dad said, no way, she can't. I'm not allowed to. So, you know, I was like, okay, well, you know, that's life. And then Andrej say, okay, well, you know what? I'm just going to take you on for 3 months. You know, I'll teach you about cigars and about premium cigars specifically. Travel around a bit, do these seminars, I get it going for 3 months, you know. And after those 3 months, he was very happy with me. And he said, Emma, you know what? I'm going to hire you. Maybe you'll get fired right away. Maybe we'll both get fired. I don't know. I'm just going to hire you. And he did. And none of us were fired. But it was quite a tough road for me in a good way. because I had to really work hard to prove myself as Victorson's daughter. My dad had a lot of people who loved him, but he had a lot of people who, I don't like to say the word hate, but hated him. Because he was working the Eastern way. I'm not going to get into details, but you understand there's a cultural.
Mm-hmm.
And Swedish Match being based in Holland, the ones who did not like my dad, they were really pushing to get me out. They were really pushing for it. I mean, there are some ugly stories in there that I don't want to share like this. It's not.
Right.
Nice.
I didn't know that part at all.
And then, so I had to prove myself more.
Right.
Because, and then it was me, not because of this. It was me because of my passion that I wanted to really get into the factory, get my hands in and really learn about cigars. And there was no point of talking to Swedish Match about that in Holland. I was, absolutely, there was no point. I spoke directly to Modesta Fondor that time, and Daniel Nunez that time, and Ernesto Perez Carrillo, who was still there. And they saw my passion, and they believed in me, and they decided to give me the ambassador training that they give to the Americans. So for me, that was very touching. I was this girl in my 20s, working in Eastern Europe, where they sell less cigars than a street in New York, and to give me that training, and I did it. I took my whole summer for that. So that's how I learned about cigars, really, was with General Cigar Factory. And I had those amazing tutors, real legends, if you ask me.
That's a great influence that you had there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely there. And like I said, there was a lot I didn't know about that I learned. I knew you obviously had time at Swedish Match. I didn't realize all that. That's an amazing story.
But I'm so happy. I mean, the challenge was so good because it pushed me,
Right.
It pushed me to work harder. It pushed me to learn more. And at the end, it worked because then I grew to become marketing manager for over nine countries. So.
Yeah, the next time any of your reps in the States complain about their territory being too big, you can just drop that knowledge on them.
That's so good.
Yeah, no,
that's a good point.
There you go. But somehow you made it over to the Central America at some point, right? So that's when I met you in Central America. I remember I met you in Nicaragua in 2012. You were pregnant with Jasper.
That's right.
I think we stopped at a rest stop. I was with Jose that week at Drew Estate, and we stopped at a rest stop, and that's when I first met you. How did you get over to Central America? How did that all come about?
Well, I mean, I left Swedish Match I was dating Jose. I had just started dating Jose in 2010. Right. And I left Swedish Match for him. And that was in the same time as I merged with Scandinavian. And that's when the good guys at Swedish Match popped up all of a sudden, Oh, my God, please stay with us. You're safe with Scandinavian, And I was like, yeah, no, sorry, I'm leaving, for personal reasons. So, and it was all for personal reasons. I would not have left otherwise because I loved my job. I really did.
Yep.
Jose became, he became the senior VP for Hoy de Nicaragua, and that's how we ended up in Nicaragua.
Yep. That's why I remember having you there. And while he was there, I know that's when his project was CY Bay. You were involved in some of the blending sessions of that, if I'm not mistaken.
I was. Obviously that was before I was pregnant, because then I was in Estelia all the time.
Yeah, the cigar was already out when I met you, by the way. So.
Sorry, what?
The cigar was already out when we met. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I remember that. No, but, yes, I was. I was obviously not working for them, but I was behind the curtain, let's say, marketing-wise, giving a lot of my opinions. And I was in the discussions in the meetings. The blending, Jose was, of course, at the core of the blending. Of course, it's CYBs, Cuenca and Blanco. It's Cuenca y Blanco. It's both Alejandro and Jose. But they wanted to really learn from Jose, like blending with different tobaccos from different countries, different areas, in the same time as Jose was learning more about Nicaraguan tobacco. And automatically, I learned more about Nicaraguan tobacco. And I have my favorite ones, Jalapa, to be honest, and Ometepe, which very few get of. I love Ometepe, but you know, very few have it. But let's say from the more, well, the ones that are more out there, Jalapa is my favorite one. Now, so I learned more about Nicaraguan tobacco in the same time. I was again hands-on. We were a group of people at the table sitting with tobacco leaves, smoking leaf by leaf. Really doing blends from scratch. Because it's different, like when I did Freya and Freya 12, it's different because I knew about, after Señorial, after working with Jose on Señorial, I mean, he did Señorial, of course, but I was there and smoking leaf by leaf, and I learned what Jorge has in the factory. Blending Freya and Freya 12 has been more like, okay, I know what Jorge has, I know what will always be available, and so on and so on, and whereas when they did CYB, it was different. It was really smoking leaf by leaf, because suddenly we were, you know, smoking leaves from different countries and different areas. And Jose and I were both learning about the Nicaraguan one. And I was at that same table smoking, and while we were, and then blending together, blind, of course. So I was a part of that team doing it. It's a Cuenca y Blanco, it's an Alejandro and Jose cigar, but we were a team, and I was part of it, yeah.
Yep, no, that's great.
And then I got pregnant and I went to the factory, and I stopped traveling with Jose when I was in 7 months.
Yeah, that's you weren't quite like, 7 months when we met.
I have to stop.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and Bear, just so you know, and for listeners don't know, like when you travel from Managua to Esteli, there's like a couple of these like rest stops that pretty much everyone goes to. And I just remember that's when we met Emma and Jose. I really would Jose at Brewer State, but like I said, that's when we both met at with those rest stops. So it's, you know, there's not a lot of them on the way, but they're everyone knows the better ones, so to speak.
Well, I don't drive and I have no sense of direction whatsoever, so I would not remember which rest
stop. So you don't drive?
No.
You know, it's interesting. My
she should get in a car.
Yeah,
she should get
in
a car with you.
My store is a bit different from.
Yeah, you got to come in the car with me, Emma.
What?
You got to come driving with me. You'll never.
Would you let me?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
I was actually going to take you as a passenger, but I let you drive.
Really?
Yeah.
So I shouldn't tell you the story then.
Go through. Go
oh,
through
you got to tell it now.
Go,
you got to
go through the Will Cooper School of Driving.
You didn't let me drive.
I'll let you drive the Lexus. I'll let you drive the Lexus. I mean, as long as Jose's got and you got insurance. No, what about I mean, you and Jose got insurance? I'm okay.
We lived in Hungary in the 90s when you could still bribe. And my dad was traveling all the time, like I said, and he would leave these 20 and 100 dollar a year bills in his sport jackets and his suits in his closet. And I would pick out and I would bribe. I did not learn anything. I did not pass any test. On the written exam, I got 10 questions instead of 100. And then I paid extra to get 5 questions. I got 3 of them right. So I passed. I literally don't know the rules. I don't have this sense of feeling where I am because I don't know. I wasn't into it, I guess. And my teacher was just like, yeah, whatever. But the final one, actually, I had to do the final test twice because the first one did not take a bribe. By then I was used to it. I was like, okay. I know. He's like, okay, did I pass? No, you didn't. All right. So you take money, right? 200, the usual. And he's like, no. You go sit on the other side right now. I was like, oh my God. I said, okay, I'm sorry. So the second time I did my final exam, I had a whole show going. I pretended to be more nervous than usual. I made up a story that my parents had both been away for 3 months and I want to pick them up at the airport. It's not true. They were both home. Even my dad was home. And in the end, did I pass? Emma, you know, you didn't. And I was like, oh my God. And this time the examiner said, how long are you going to stay in Budapest? I'm like, well, no, I'm just leaving now. I'm going to college in Paris, in France. Okay, just stop crying. Give me a smile. I'll give you the license. It's okay. Apparently, you wanted to make sure I'm not staying. But I guess, but there were a few months. Like, this was like midterm.
Right, right.
And I had a car. Thank God, a safe car, a BMW. I had it for her. Oh, she had a name and everything. Shiny. Anyway, so I had my shiny for 3.5 months and I crashed into a bus.
What?
Yeah. And I mean, there was.
Jose's like, it's funny. Jose's making comments ahead of these, by the way, these stories.
Yeah, he's like, ask her about it. Like,
yeah, go ahead, keep going. This is funny. And then you mentioned the bus before that.
Well, yeah. So I was coming, the bus was coming this way. I was going to turn that way. And there was a giveaway sign, which I obviously didn't know what meant because I didn't know the rules. Like, back to that. So whatever sign, the triangle was there, I didn't know what it means. Because as you understood, I never learned to took the real tests. And so I was just kind of thinking, like, what do I do? Do I wait for the bus to pass? Or do I just press the gas and go for it? Obviously, I pressed the gas and I went for it.
There you go.
And I hit the bus right in the middle. And what I didn't know was that the engine was in the middle of the bus. So actually, I broke down the whole bus.
Oh, my goodness.
And I mean, I had...
You weren't hurt, right? The most important thing is you weren't...
I was safe. I didn't know what
to
do.
Yeah, I shouldn't be laughing, but you know, hopefully you weren't hurt. Yeah.
No, I was fine. I didn't know what to do. So I left. I ran.
Oh, my goodness.
Because I had friends from Canada, actually, Canadian friends, living like right there. And I was like... Sarah, Mark, get out here. I got into an accident. They're like, what? So her brother, Mark, and his friend, Ray, they went first. And me and Sarah, we went afterwards. We're like, okay, what's up? You know, the police asked me, how could you leave the car in the middle of the road? Like, well, how can you leave your car? And I remember what I answered. I said, well, because I can't move it. It's broken.
Wow.
And the police, he didn't even answer me. He just looked at me. He just, like, literally just walked away and looked for someone who would understand.
That's awesome.
And this happened at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. We bought a rose, put a rose on my car. It was towed away just to disappear. My friends and I went to the mall. Then it went out. Then it was like 11:30 p.m. I called my parents. I called home. My dad picked up the phone. I was like, hi, can I talk to mom? He's like, why? Nah, I'd rather speak to mom. He's like, no. If you'd rather speak to mom, I want you to speak to me. He understood there's something. I said, yeah, I had an accident. The car's broken. I need cab money. And I'll be home on curfew. And he was like, oh my God, what happened? How are you? And I said, no, it's okay. It happened at 3 p.m. And then he got angry.
Oh.
He's like, where are you now? With music behind. And it was a mess. I was grounded for a long time.
Oh, my God. This is a great story.
Great story.
We have one comment saying the story's getting better and better as it goes along.
I know, no joke, man. It's like an epic. It's a saga.
And very few people have let me drive after that.
I will let you drive.
Thank you very much. And hey, it was when I got pregnant, that's when I started to think that I shouldn't drive because my life got a new meaning. So.
Oh, I mean, it's like I said, I will give you a whole new appreciation for driving.
Thank you. Just make sure there's no other cars or anything around.
No, you don't need to worry.
Cars down there.
Yeah. So I grew up in New York, Emma, and my father owned a limo company. And
wow.
He let me drive. I drove the sedans. I didn't drive the limos. So I kind of got my driving in Manhattan is a skill, is what I'll just say. But I've kept it the rest of my life. These guys have been in the car with me, they could tell you.
Wow, fantastic.
Yeah. A washing machine could have a motor, a steering wheel, and wheels, and Coop could drive the shit out of it.
Sorry, what do you say, Bear?
I said a washing machine could have a wheel, an engine, and wheels, and Coop would drive the shit out of it.
I love it.
But, so, Emma, getting back to the CYV project, there was something I wanted to ask you. Mm-hmm. So you were part of this team. You know, obviously Jose was a central part of it as well, but. You know, Coop and I will be the first to tell you that we're still to this day very big fans of that cigar.
Oh yeah.
And we feel like it didn't catch a fair break. You know,
while
it received a lot of critical acclaim from folks like Coop and I and just enthusiasts in general, it never caught fire. And you know, it would never really. So why do you think, from your perspective, why do you think it just didn't have as much success commercially, even though it was critically hailed as a success?
Yes, I would say marketing. I think it was very poor marketing. The name first was Cuenca y Blanco, and then because of legal reasons, it had to be cut to CYB because of the name Blanco, I think, or the name Cuenca, whatever. So they cut it to CYB, which I thought was not a good name personally. I had other ideas, which I don't remember right now, but I thought it was CYB was just not a name heavy enough for Alejandro Martinez Cuenca and Jose Blanco.
Yeah.
So when they did that, I thought that was just an easy way out, and I did not agree with it at all, but that was not my call. The design was fine, but I think I think, again, Alejandro Martinez Cuenca and Jose Blanco, you have one Nicaraguan and one Dominican. That was not pushed. I kept saying, push this. There's one Nicaraguan and one Dominican. When does that happen? How many times has that happened?
There was another thing, Emma. It was someone who
Poorly marketed. That's what it, that's my, because it was a fantastic blend.
And it was.
Those who know how to smoke, and even those who don't know how to smoke, doesn't matter. It was a great cigar.
I thought where they missed the marketing with it, right, was you had Jose, who just had left the oldest factory in the Dominican Republic, and he went to
the oldest of Nicaragua.
Yeah, that's right. Where I thought that should have been.
That as well.
Yeah.
Just now because, that you say it, that was another side.
I know it's a competitive company, but I still think that could have been weaved into the story very well.
Yes.
Because it was a very unique scenario.
Now that you say it, that was another one of my points, which I forgot right now. But yes, it was poorly marketed. I mean, it had everything. I mean, it had Alejandro Martinez Cuenca from the oldest factory in Nicaragua. It had Jose Blanco, very well known from the oldest factory in Dominican Republic. Both of them blending together. Right. Forget that we were a team. Everyone's always a team. Everyone who says that I blended this alone. Come on, no. There's a bunch of people in the factory involved. There always is.
Yeah.
More or less, it might be two or three or four or five, six or seven, but it's not a one man show. And in this case, it was not a two man show either. But it could. I mean, yeah, they could have done so much with that. And then it just became CYB, and that's it. And the design was very simple. To keep costs down, I think. I don't know. I think it was poorly marketed.
This name is obviously taken too, but when I talk about CYB specifically, the word I use to describe it is and again, this you couldn't have used this as a brand because it's obviously taken, but it's a very timeless blend.
Mm.
You know, it's not something of the Nicaraguan craze necessarily that exists, you know, it has existed in the industry. In the last few years, it's not something that's Dominican. Again, it's the perfect complement of the two countries from two of its most storied factories, as you kind of talked about, with prominent people from both of those backgrounds. So it's a very, I choose to describe it as a very timeless blend because it can exist almost in a vacuum it can exist, you know, that cigar can exist in the 90s during the boom and fit right in to the portfolio. It can easily come back into the market today and be, you know, can fit into the smoker's portfolio today as well. And so, yeah, no, Coop and I have talked about CYB extensively.
Yep.
Because we really enjoyed the blend, and it was, we were both disappointed that it just didn't catch fire.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's, like I said, yeah, I think it was poorly marketed, and all the points that you are making, all the points that Will is making, it all goes into it. And these things happen to a lot of cigars. I mean, look at Señorial and Freya, because of what happened to our, like, personally, I had to leave, you know?
So
if I had been here these years, it could have been a different story right now, you know?
Yeah, so let's get into that a little.
I'm kind of restarting Las Cumbres Tabaco right now. I'm kind of really restarting it.
Yeah.
We don't even have a website anymore because, we lost the domain by now. And I said, you know what, forget it. It doesn't make sense anymore. It has to be redesigned. It has to be retold. It's not, I probably won't even call it Las Cumbres Tabaco. I probably want to call it señorialenfreya.com. You know, to the point it's become now, you know? So, I'm really restarting. So there's a lot of things that happened to CYB, and that I would say that happened to Señorial and Freya, but in different ways because of personal reasons or whatnot, that have kept these brands a little bit in the background.
Yeah, let's kind of talk a little about that. You saw that you go over to the Dominican Republic, and you have success with the Señorial and Freya brands.
It's going but well.
They're doing well, but then you and Jose make this very big decision there, where Jose goes to EPC, begins a very, very good career over at EPC, does some great things, and you're continuing to work the Las Cumbres brands, but you made the decision at the time, and I'm assuming a lot of this was FDA driven, because this was right after FDA deeming rule came in.
Yes, it was. We had to come out with the blend Freya 12 very fast.
Yep.
Because of the FDA.
Yep.
I decided to not come out with it because I had to leave for these personal reasons to legalize property.
Yep.
I waited for the right time to come out with it, which I believe it is, because right now Freya 12 has become the new star. Everyone's going crazy.
It's a great. This is a fantastic cigar.
Thank you.
I mean,
I love the Señorial, and I have one here that Coop was kind enough to get for me, and I love this blend as well, but. Coop, with all respect, I think I'm going to light up another one of these Freya 12s.
Like I said, it's a nice compliment to what you've had in the Freya line. What I love about Freya is a line that aged very nicely. It just, when you age those Freyas, they even get better. But this is a complete, like, I didn't know what to expect with this. This is like, and it is a completely different blend, so I should have expected something different, but it's a nice addition to the portfolio there.
Well, to be honest with you, the Freya 12 means even more to me because as a second blend, it was scarier for me because I was thinking maybe with the first blend, it could have been luck. You know what I mean?
Yep.
I'm like, if I can make a second blend, but I want it different, that's when I can see if I can really work with tobacco. So Freya 12 means a lot to me, means actually even more to me. And, the response I have gotten, well, it's been in Scandinavia, as you know, and we're going to get into the Dvalin thing. And the Americans, where I've been so far, it's been in Florida, it's been in, well, Texas, Dallas, where I just came back from. It's been in New Jersey. It's been the unanimous acceptance. Like, people really have, the Freya 12 has really become the new star. And even the reps have decided to use the Freya 12 as the first cigar to give to new accounts.
That's a good. It's a night to get a 7x52. Is, I think, a tough size. They tend to underperform, and this one's completely satisfying me. It's drawing great. There's great balance on this. I love the aroma on this cigar too.
The draw is quintessential.
The draw is, yeah.
Well, that's the Bacalera Palma factory's job. They do a fantastic job. Yeah. I mean, their construction is beautiful.
Yeah.
Coop Wishes is bigger, though.
A bit about Señorial. As you might know or remember, for the first Freya, I didn't tell Jose Rabuche that I was blending. Because...
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to see if I can do it.
Right.
So a lot of people were asking Jose to make, make a cigar for Emma. Emma should be the face of a cigar. And me, the marketing geek that I am, I love marketing just as much as I love tobacco. And plus that I'm very demanding of myself. I was thinking I do it or I don't. With all respect to everyone, who doesn't matter how you do it, but this is how I wanted to do it. Either I stay behind the curtain and, you know, with Jose and Señorial, you know, do my designs, or if I come out with mine, it means that I blended. And the reason I didn't tell Jose or Hochi was because they would automatically influence me. And that's not a bad thing. I mean, they're fantastic blenders.
Right.
So the influence would not be bad. But I would end up thinking, did I blend this at all? And I would also not know what my signature is. I wouldn't know what is my style. So it was a risk. And then I worked with Geraldito Perez, was back then the production manager in the factory. And I told him, let's keep this a secret. He loved my idea of my blend. And we tweaked it a little bit, just for 1 week, nothing. We barely tweaked it at all. And they loved it. Jorge loved it even more than Jose. Jorge wanted to do something with it. And then Geraldito said, no, señor, nada, no. This is Emma's blend. And they were both like, what? You know, jaw dropping. And I was okay, now I know I can do something. Now we can start tweaking. But I still didn't do it with Jose or Jorge. It was still my thing. Because we wanted Señorial to be Jose, Freya to be Emma. Even the names, even the designs are very, Señorial is a very classic name with an old painting, and Freya is a more modern painting. And well, the Nordic god is the Nordic thing, you know. It was, so it's all very personalized. And when you smoke them, when you smoke Señorial and you smoke Señorial Maduro and you smoke Freya and you smoke Freya 12, you see a clear difference in the signature of the profile. To me, Señorial is more, I would say maybe more sophisticated. You would have to maybe have a more philosophy, think about it more, what the flavors are. It's not in your face as much. Mine is more in your face. Like it has the pepper, it has the earth, it has the hints of sweet, you know, I think you can see the two signatures very clearly.
Very. I don't know what you're getting on the back end of this, because I think we're about the same point in the cigar. You're hitting the label, right?
I just took it off.
I'm getting some really nice, beautiful, like that creaminess that was in the beginning of the cigar has kind of changed into more of a really nice, beautiful, rich, buttery, toasty, you know, really kind of almond nut thing going.
Little pepper on the back of the throat.
Yeah, a little pecker. Yeah, but the pepper is actually faded. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Usually cigars, you know, cigars, especially with this body, get kind of like the spice gets more pronounced and everything. That's kind of faded, and it's become much more rich. I'm really enjoying this.
You said buttery. That's very interesting, because it is true. If you put pepper and buttery together, buttery would automatically bring the peppery down, like you say. I think that was a very, very nice description that you just said. Thank you.
You know, Emma,
that makes a lot of sense. Yes.
The other thing that really is now starting to click that I smoked this cigar, and from our conversations we've had, this was a big hit in Europe. It was a big hit in Sweden, right? And I can see how the Europeans would really like this profile. I mean, it's just, to me, I don't want to say it's not Cuban. I'm not saying it smokes like a Cuban, nothing like that. But I just kind of see this profile resonating well in Europe, and I can see why they love this cigar. Just from my short time in Europe, which is a lot shorter than anything, but I see it. Yeah.
Or the open-minded Europeans, let's say.
Okay, but you had a little problem. You had a little problem with this cigar in Stockholm. Like, they loved it so much, but they couldn't smoke it.
Well, here's the thing that happened. It was six towns. There we go. If you can show the dwarf a little bit more.
There you go. There you go.
Slower. There's the dwarf with a big name, Dvalin. Because all the Freyas have Norse mythology names to them. But the Norse mythology names, they're like on the box. mm-hmm. very small. This one has a big dvalin on it. Yep. And that has, yeah, there's a reason for that. So yes, I went to six main cities in Sweden. Well, of course, we know the main cities, Stockholm, Gothenburg, right. Malmö, Örebro. I'm so ashamed right now.
After Gothenburg,
come on. Two more cities. Oh, anyway, Borås and, you know, you always forget the last one. Anyway.
Right, don't worry.
It's like counting the seven dwarves. You know, it's like, you know, there's always one missing. To all these, I'm thinking what town, oh, forget. Anyway, in these six main towns, and there was also people coming in, you know, from Denmark, from Finland, you know, also. And they unanimously loved it so much. Freya 12 was their favorite of all La Scombra, from Señorial, Señor Maduro, and Freya. It was, and I'm not joking when I say unanimous. It was literally unanimous.
It was every single
person. And I was so touched. I was like, wow, that's amazing. I'm so happy. Thank you. And again, it was unanimous. They all said, there's one problem, the size. And I said, I wanted to make it a Churchill. It's a one size cigar, you know, the 12, yada, yada. And they said, Emma, we need a winner cigar. And I said, what's a winner cigar? They said, Emma, it's a small cigar because we can't smoke anywhere. We have a long, cold winter. And we want to smoke this without freezing outside. And
they're just not dedicated.
Excuse me?
They're just not dedicated.
Well, you could say that too, but yeah, no, I get it. when you stand in the snow, you know, you're in Texas. So for you, that's actually what some people in Dallas said in Texas. They said that this the winter cigar for them would be a summer cigar. They can't stand outside.
Yeah. I am going to tell you, I am taking this cigar when I go to New York. I'm going to be in New York in December, and I'm going to smoke it outside, and if it's cold today, and I'm going to show them that it could be smoked in the cold. I'm going to show them. But I'm glad you were able to create this.
I love it. Well, I mean, so basically, I called, so that was in November 2018. I contacted the factory right away. I said, look, no, this has to happen. And it has to be the Freya 12 blend. It has to be the same profile. And it has to be much smaller. And but then came Christmas and New Year's. They started to work on it in January. I came in February for Pro Cigar, but I came for a longer period. And we worked on it more. And a 50 ring gauge, no problem. So we went with the 5 inches. It's short enough. It wouldn't be shorter because with all this pepper, it would kind of like boom off too much if it was shorter for a lot of people.
Right.
It would, it's maybe not bad, but it would not be the same profile that.
Right. I think this is, like I said, I could see why people would want this profile.
Yeah. And then I didn't want it to be a 50 ring gauge because going from 52 to 50 doesn't really make a statement. So I said, okay, let's at least go to the 40s, 49. No problem. 48, no problem. I said, okay, look, let's do 46, see how it goes. It went fantastic. And I said, okay, let's not blow it. Keep it at 5x46. It's small enough. And that's what we did. And and then was the big test when I went back to Sweden in June with this dwarf, which became a dwarf, with the smallest cigar to see if it passed the test, you know. And it totally did. It was the same six cities. Some were new people. So a lot of them were the same people. And it totally passed the test. And that meant a lot to me. And then the whole dwarf story, that's why I wanted to show the dwarf more. The design was that I thought that, you know, this was such a specific demand. Like I've never gotten such a specific demand before. That I really wanted this to count. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to let them choose the name. So that's when, are we still all there?
Coop, take a break. I'm here, Emma.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Coop knows, he knows the story anyway. So we did, me together with Martin, my distributor in Sweden, Carl Martin of Brooks Nelson. We decided to do a contest on Facebook and Instagram for the name. And it should be Norse mythology, should have a meaning. And we got more than 300 responses. And that's a lot of people.
Wow.
Well, it's a small country. Sweden is a small country. So we really got a lot of responses. And the harder job was not for me. The harder job was for Martin, my distributor. Because I said to him, just dump all the stupid names. Only send me the good ones. And I had promised, okay, I'm going to choose between somewhere between 5 and 10 names. And then I'm going to let Sweden vote. But there were two guys who did not know each other from two separate places in Sweden, not at all connected, different time as well, who said, it's a smaller cigar. The first one is a Churchill named by the necklace Brisingamen. And this necklace Brisingamen was created by four dwarves. So the smallest cigar should have the name of one of the dwarves. And that was, for me, a marketing no-brainer. I was like, wow, they are the winners. So I said to Martin, you know, I said, well, you know what? Can't we just lie about it? Just like, I'm going to pick a few names and then we just say that these won. And then he said, no, in Sweden, we don't lie. I was like, I'm sorry. Okay. So let's keep it honest. And so I honestly said, I'm sorry, guys. I picked two winners already, and these are the winners. And they got a bunch of cigars they got a few señoriales, a few señoriales maduros, a bunch of Freyas. They got a signed Freya 12 boxes, and of course, the Dvalin packs. And but there are four dwarves, Dvalin, Greer, Berling, and Alfrig. And that was a clear vote between them, and Valen won.
I like the name. That's a good one.
But
that's why there's such a big dwarf a name on it, because it's they created the name, so it means so much more, you know. I mean that I would say like a Sweden created the cigar, you know, in the Dvalin one, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
They and now the right name. A lot of people are asking for more sizes. I'm like, yeah, well, I have three more dwarves to go with, so
yeah,
I might work on more sizes in between. We will see.
I can already tell you that Coop wants a 60 gauge. I can already tell you that. So
there you go.
This is
my jam. I can tell you Bear already wants a Lancero. So
okay.
He wants a petite Lancero.
It won't work with the dwarf name though, so she can't make the Lancero. This is perfect though.
Yeah,
46 gauge.
The problem with Lancero is that those who love the Lanceros, including myself, are very vocal about it on social media and love to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
But in sales, we don't see the numbers.
Because, 100%. Yeah, yeah, we know. We've been over this. Yeah. It's unfortunate.
So, I mean, Señorial has a Lancero, a 38 ring gauge Lancero, and it comes out only, it will only come out with it once a year. So the Señorial 38 ring gauge Lancero each have 1 year of age to them because they come out once a year.
I've smoked that cigar. It's phenomenal.
Oh, yeah. I love it.
It was good. It was good. Do you – so Señora is still very much a brand. Has that been a little more challenging, maybe not having Jose as the face of that side of the brand right now?
It hasn't been challenging, actually.
It's That's
been
good.
Okay. I mean, people know it's Jose's. When people buy Señorial boxes and I sign by Jose Blanco, you know.
Yeah.
I don't sign his name that it's him, but I write, you know, to so and so enjoy.
Yep.
Emma Victorson by Jose Blanco, you know?
Right, right.
And I do that with big letters and I make that clear. It hasn't been a challenge actually.
So right after, you know, you were done with your events in Sweden, then you kind of, now you've come back to the U.S. and you've done a relaunch of the both brands. And it seems like it's taken off really well. Like people, you know, didn't forget about these cigars.
Yeah. That's what I mean. That's why I felt so blessed that I didn't actually forget about them, because I didn't push them when I was away. I didn't feel it was fair to push them when no one is out there.
Right.
I thought that would not be fair of me. I wouldn't feel good. I wouldn't personally not feel good.
Right. And it's, yeah.
So
and
the new relaunch is doing fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. And you mentioned they're doing the 12 and the Zevlin are doing really good as well.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think I talked to Jose the night you did that event in Florida. The next day, I talked to Jose, and he was just raving how he said it was a huge event.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, it was great. It was a lot of people showed up, and it was a lot of excitement.
Yeah.
They loved the cigar. And same thing happened when I was in Indonados in Jersey. Well, you know Matty Rock.
Yep.
He fell in love with Freya 12. And he was pushing it for me so much. And it was so funny because, you know, we did a buy three, get one. And it was so funny because Matty pushed it so much. A lot of people ended up buying Freya 12, three, and they still wanted a Freya 12 for free. And I was like, but it's mix and match, people. Take something else, you know?
They all want what's new. Everyone wants what's new, though.
So it's the Freya 12 really became become the new star. And now in Dallas, my rep Carter, and by the way, I want to introduce him as I'm also building like a new rep team. There's a lot of more reps I need to find, which is not easy, as you know. And for the great state of Texas, I just got Carter Skinner, who is fantastic. I mean, you know, he's with Tiburon, and he's also in the board of Boutique Cigars of Association of America, and he's doing a fantastic job. And when I was in Dallas, every single store we went to took us in, every single one. And he chose the Freya Dvalin to be the one to give first. So and I'm going back. I'm planning to go back to Texas, hopefully in March. Hopefully that's the plan. But also go to Houston and Austin and Dallas again and do more events. So that's one of the next places I'm going.
We'll have to meet up in the spring.
I'm
for
also
sure.
going to Atlanta, Georgia in the beginning of February. So to a smokehouse store. They wanted to launch Freya 12 in the same during the Super Bowl event, so I thought that's really cool.
Yeah, yeah, that's in Atlanta is a huge market, as you know.
So those are my two nearest trips in the States planned. But yes, I'm also you spoke about Europe. I'm also going to focus more on Europe now. I'm going to be there a lot. Probably even move there now again.
Oh, wow.
That's because of the FDA.
Right.
We don't know what the ruling is going to be in May. And for a small company like we are, it's really scary. I won't hide it. It's scary.
You're more realistic than I think a lot of people we talk to who are in denial.
It's the first time I am realistic. Yeah. Like one of my best friends, she's not watching this because she doesn't smoke cigars at all. Her name is Roxanne. And she always says that if it's about numbers or anything negative, anything wrong, Emma goes, la, 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 la. And that's what I've been doing about the FDA as well, you know.
Well, I think that's a lot of people have been doing that.
You know, but now when I know that something might happen in May, we'll see it. I'm like, you know what, I have to get these European markets. And those years that I spent in Macedonia, we had these issues with residency then, with new laws and this and that. I wasn't allowed to let travel leave the country. Now that Jasper, my son, and I don't have that issue anymore, we're going to go back home to Macedonia, which is my home where I have my condo.
Right.
Legalize everything normal. Residency so I can travel. And that's where I have the babysitters that I can trust to be with him. So now I plan to go to the States, let's say once every 2 months. I want to make it 2 states at a time, but it depends. In March, it's probably going to be only Texas because it's such a big state.
Damn right.
In February, in February, it's probably only going to be Atlanta because then there's a Pro Cigar, which I don't know if I'm going to attend or not, depending. I have so much to balance out with my son. That's something I'm that kind of mother, you know. I mean, even I mean, if you remember when I came out with Freya, he was 2 years old, and I refused to travel. I refused to. So timing was kind of stupid. I didn't think about it. I was like, yeah, I'm coming out with a cigar, but I'm not moving. I'm not leaving my baby.
Right, right.
And we're living in Hoboken, New Jersey for 1 year. So at least I did some events short car ride home.
Yeah.
Now that Jasper's bigger, I can leave him with the babysitter, but there's no one here that I could, like, if I would stay living here, I could not go to Europe because there's no one here I would trust him with. I have no idea who I would leave him with.
Sure, no, it's understandable.
So Emma will
Las and Cumbres. Now Jose has been home with Jasper, you know?
Yeah.
But Jose is choosing between two things, and he's going to start traveling. So he can't stay home and be the babysitter all the time. So we're going to balance that again. But it's going to be an easier balance now that we can travel.
Yeah.
When Jasper has his two-month summer vacation, I will spend the whole two summers here in America somewhere. So, for example. So it's not tragic this time.
Will Las Cumbres be making a return to the PCA trade show this year?
Yes, I plan to. I plan to, yes.
Wonderful.
That would be good. It'll be good. It's been a while. I remember the last time you had a babysitter problem that year.
Well, no. I mean, this year, I was there just to say hi to people.
Right.
I didn't have a babysitter.
But a couple of years ago, I remember you had that one problem.
Yeah, exactly. And I was in and out, and I had to find people walking around with him in a stroller because I am so overprotective. I don't know. I can't. And this year, I didn't have my cigars there because there was no way. I left Jasper at a daycare just for 2 hours just to pop in. And then I wanted to do fun stuff with him. I wanted to take, he was in Vegas and he was 6 and a half. I wanted to do fun things with him. So now for this summer, I have something planned for him to come and someone to take care of him so I can work. So I am learning to really balance this out now. That I can work, I can travel, I can do Europe, I can do United States, and I'm going to have people, babysitters to be with my child. So, but it took the time for Jasper to turn 7 years old for this to happen in my case.
Right, right. And he just had a big birthday party we saw.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yes, he did.
We saw Jose. Jose.
Oh, la piñata.
Oh, my good.
Oh, that is the best television
that has
ever been produced.
I said, Bear, just click this. It's worth every second.
That was so funny. I know. That was so funny.
if you watch the video, Emma, in slow motion.
Yeah.
When Jose's actually, getting attacked.
Bending over.
You got to see some of the facial expressions. They're priceless.
Oh, I have to do that.
Do it in slow motion. Yeah, they're priceless. Stop the video at certain parts. You'll.
That's hilarious.
I was watching it so many times, my wife thought I was nuts. She's like, how many times are you going to watch? I said, it doesn't get old. It was better than when he got attacked by the geese.
This is hilarious.
Yeah, we have that one too. Well, we're both going to be back to the geese for Christmas.
So, yeah, we got to get a geese report from Macedonia.
We're going to have to get a geese report again.
Okay. Yeah, we got to have a good report on. But, I think people like that. They like seeing the human side of both you and Jose. And I think that's what, we're having fun with it. I think there's a serious, I think people really like that. And that's why I think people connect with your brand and they connect with you and they connect with the great cigars you're making. So I think it works.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Yeah. That means very much. That really means a lot.
Yeah. I got another question for you. I know we kept you a long time. It's past midnight.
No, it's fine.
Let me ask you this quick. There was some blends that were kind of out there. I know one that I'm thinking about is Freya Nocturnal. Am I correct?
Oh yeah, but that was all for the FDA though.
Yeah, are they things that are just right now on hold? I guess you can come out with them.
No, it's completely on hold.
Okay.
Mm-mm. That was all for the FDA.
Okay.
And those that came out were not really.
Understood.
I can't talk about it openly, but yeah, no, it's not at all.
Okay.
So Emma, I do have a question. You know, as you said, this was your project entirely, and Coop and I are enjoying it very, very much. But you've had the privilege of, you know, of working with two of the finest blenders in the, you know, in the industry. And I don't think anyone can argue that Jorge Blanco and Jose Blanco are two of the finest minds in this industry. What would you say is, you know, what has been like your biggest influence from each of them? Like, what have you taken from each of them that's helped you along the way, or that you would define as their defining characteristic in blending?
Well, to be honest with you, everything I've taken in my blending has been from, I cannot say from one person, because it's been through everyone that I've learned from ever since my time with General. And then with Jose privately, with Jose in Hoya, which is not even only him, that's from all the Hoya people. And then finally here in Tabaco de la Palma with Vochi and the Geraldito, who's not with them anymore. It has been really from everyone. So I cannot say from what I have taken from each blending-wise, so taste-wise, which is why I didn't want to include them. However, if they don't approve my blend, both of them, I would not come out with them. I mean, that is, I mean, I need their approval and I need their specific notes for me to continue tweaking. Let's put it that way.
Awesome.
That's really, but I've been so lucky to have learned from so many. And maybe that's why also I developed my own personal, say, signature in my blending, because I've learned, it's been from so many places and people that I've learned from, you know?
100%.
And, I think you have your own signature.
Still, yeah. Now, when we talk with Ernesto, I mean, we still see Ernesto every time he's in Santiago. I also tell him thank you, because he was one of my first tutors, and I've learned real basics. He was also one of the ones that I learned basics from. So I've really learned from a lot of people. But if you talk about Jose and Hochi, I want their notes, their critique, maybe positive or negative, and that's where I go tweaking from. And then I want their approval. I would not come out with anything without both of their approval, which might not be exactly the same either, because they're different also from each other.
Yeah, I don't want to steal your thunder, but I think you were about to say, I echo that sentiment. You definitely have put your own signature on this.
Yes,
this is something very, very unique.
Thank you so much.
I'm just really enjoying.
I love spice in a cigar. I love that. I love the feeling of spice in the lips.
But it doesn't assault the palate. That's what the thing. This isn't going to assault your palate, would it?
No, it doesn't go. No, it doesn't go back in the palate. No, it doesn't go back. No.
Yeah.
It stays in the front. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what I want. I want it to stay in the front, just like, you know, like pure spice or pure pepper and sweetness would, which is in the front.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what I like to focus on, personally.
Yeah, this is a fantastic cigar. So thank you for sharing this with us. Yeah.
Yes, very much so.
Yep.
Thank you so much. And I'm excited when you try the Dvalin also, if you think that we managed to make a similar profile. Because it's different when you work from, with a lot of brands, even most brands, and all of our other brands, Señorial, Señor Maduro, and Freya, it's gone from Corona, Corona Gorda, Robusto, Toro, 6x60, Lancero, Figurado, and so on and so on. This time we went from a Churchill 7x52 immediately down to a 5x46 without having the experience of working these tobaccos in between. So that was a challenge in itself.
I'm sure.
I bet, yeah. I bet on it.
It'd be very interesting to hear your opinion of the Dvalin when you someday.
Oh, you will. Yep. No, you'll definitely hear from us on that. I know we'll be in touch. Bear, is there anything else we wanted to cover with Emma?
No, this is terrific. Terrific cigar, great conversation.
Yeah.
Just wonderful to sit down with you, Emma, for sure.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're really glad to have had you on the show, and that won't be the last time for sure.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, so thanks for the opportunity.
And I hope to be back. I always love talking to you guys.
Yeah, it's been a long time since we got you on the show. I'm glad we were able to work it out timing-wise. I know we kept you late in the DR, so it's
timing-wise would never be a problem. Even if I'm in Europe or anywhere, it doesn't matter because, yep. I mean, we stay up for it. It's no big deal.
All right. Awesome. So you have a great Thanksgiving. Best to Jose and Jasper as well.
Have a wonderful Thanksgiving, both of you.
Yep.
Yes, happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, and we'll be in touch for sure. I mean, you'll be hearing from me for sure on the Devlin. So.
Absolutely.
Yep. Yep.
Thank you so very, very, very much.
All right. Take care, Emma. All right. That's Emma Victorson of Las Cumbres Tobacco here on the Primetime Show. And what we will do right now is we will move on to our next sponsor break here. And of course, I don't have it up. Oh, Illusione Tobacco. Deep in flavor, deep in your mind. We are not industry standard. Illusione Cigars. Welcome back to Primetime Special Edition 63. That was a good interview, Bear, we just had there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it was
what a treat.
We kept her a long time, and she was under a little pressure before that interview because, Jasper was having his, seven-year-old.
He was being a boy.
Yeah, we'll just say that. If you heard a little pre-show, you might have heard a little of it, but it settled in, and I knew it was going to be fine. I know, like I said, there was a lot I learned. If you didn't catch that interview, you can hit the rewind button. There's some really good stories from Emma on, her time at Swedish Match. A lot I learned on that. The stuff on CYB and, just a lot of good background there. So I think we hit a lot of points there on that one.
It was, like I said, what a treat. Just, everything from just the hearing her crashing into the bus to her background in tobacco, hearing about her time in Paris. That was kind of what I really wanted to talk about.
Yeah. I did not realize, like I said, I knew she moved around, but you look at the languages she picked up along. And I forgot to ask Allison's question about the Basque, and I'll get an answer for that for you, Allison. Because Allison asked if she smoked Basque, which actually would have been really interesting because that's another language that's kind of completely different as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to ask that, but then when I saw it, we had moved on. And I knew that I know that's the first time you've had a chance to talk with her as well.
Yes.
And look, we got to get more females on the show. And in my opinion, when you're looking at, there's a lot of great females in the industry, a lot of women, great women in the industry. And Emma's certainly one of them. She probably should have got nominated for a Woman of the Year for kind of relaunching. Now that I think about it, tobacco business really, really, missed the boat with it. Because think about what she did this year. Think about what she did this year. She relaunched this brand in the U.S. I mean, she had I know it's the second half of the year, but I think it still should count.
No, 100%. But there's always next year. Yeah, speaking of great women in the industry, Karen Berger tuned in, or she might still be watching the show. She was commenting as well. Yep. There's so many tremendous women in this industry that have so much to offer. And so it's a really great, like you said, far too much time passed before we were able to get one on the show. And this is something that we this is a market we definitely need.
You've had women on El Oso Fumar Takes. So
I have. Yes.
Yeah,
so
and we had a part-time on the Lazonas with Courtney, but not a show that, like I said, centered around when we're actually gonna have another woman on Primetime with Indiana Ortiz. She's scheduled for December. So I think that's going to happen. So right now she is on the schedule.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
See, that's going to be another treat for our audience for sure.
Yep. Yep. October, we really couldn't schedule any shows because obviously there's some big news going on. There was big news going on in the Plissy household.
Yes. Yes. My son Jacob was born at the end of October.
Yep.
A few days late, so we're kind of waiting for life to happen at that point. So,
yep. So it's a little hard to do, and we wanted to be give you the family time, and special editions. You're a part of this show, so we just we accommodate. That's what we do here. That's and then we did the baseball show at the beginning of the month, which is not a cigar show,
right? So,
we haven't had a chance to talk about a few industry topics, right?
Sure. Before we dive in, may I have a moment for a personal note real quick?
Absolutely.
You know, you just alluded to it, and I really want to thank our audience in particular. You know, I don't take, you know, yes, I have my own show and everything, but I certainly don't first in you and I've talked at length about this, but I certainly don't take our relationship for granted. And I want to thank you personally on the air and publicly, for your support during this time, you know, as our family needed to be together and have some time for the arrival of our son. And it means a lot to me, and it means a lot to me that our audience, you know, has been so supportive as well, you know, as this was kind of going on and everything. And, tonight's show has just been awesome to get back in the swing of things. I know we're going to get into some nice hardcore tobacco talk, and we had a great interview with Emma and everything, but I wanted to thank you personally and publicly, wanted to thank our audience personally and publicly. It means the absolute world to me. And I on the eve of Thanksgiving, I cannot be anything but incredibly grateful for you and for our audience, and for the incredible opportunities that I've had. So thank you.
No, it's what we do. You're very welcome, but it's what we do. You know, like I said, I talked about at the beginning of the show, you know, I was doing that show last year with Omar. And, you know, and after people found out I was in the hospital, I didn't say I was in the hospital until I got out. I felt the same. It was very touching. I know how it is from you and from everyone on the primetime team, to Aaron, to just all the friends. You guys had to talk me out of doing a show from the hospital, which was pretty interesting, but,
yes,
probably the right move. Aaron actually basically did, and so did Eric from Cigar Dojo. So it's what we do, and like I said, you know, it wouldn't have been special edition without Bear DePlessy, you know. So we had to just, you know, it was totally okay. You know, that's how we do. That's how we roll here. And you know, like I said, we're 63. We're going into 2020, which is the fourth calendar year of this thing. So, it's
unbelievable.
Yeah. And like I said, we've grown like as a show, we've grown as a team, we've developed, I think, a friendship, all of us. So, and in connection with this audience who, you know, again, this audience who is, this is the best, we have the best audience in the world. There's people here every week, take the time, sometimes twice a week. Now, even with the new primetime, you got three times to hear this, and it's very much appreciated.
100%.
Yeah, so you're very, like I said, this is what we do. This is what we do. Okay, so I want to hit the big one. I want to hit. We talked about some of this with Aaron and Ben Holt on the Thursday show, but I have a few things I want to add to this discussion, which is why, and I want to get some of your thoughts on this right now. So, HR 2339, that's the, like, I would say it's probably one of the most dangerous anti-tobacco bills to impact the premium cigar industry. It got to a subcommittee. It may be going to a full committee now vote. But there was kind of a save that happened last week. And we talked mm-hmm. about that save, and there was some exemptions carved out for premium cigars.
Correct.
Some of the exemptions are exemptions from the online sale. And even there is an exemption for substantial equivalence, which I want to touch on that a little more, because I think there's some things that need to be clarified with that, which we didn't do on Thursday. But the big controversy is the resurrection of a minimum price point for a premium cigar in the definition, which happened, and that's the $12 price point. Correct. I haven't heard your thoughts on this. Aaron and I, we gave some thoughts on Thursday, and like I said, I have some things I want to add that I've kind of gone through since that Thursday show. So give me your thoughts. What do you think?
Well, the first part of this conversation has to start with the fact that I think that the House bill is, first of all, I think that there is some positives. And normally I'm very much in, and don't get me wrong, I've got my soapbox prepped and ready. I'll be getting on it a little bit on this as we kind of go along to this dialogue. But I think for the negatives that can be stipulated within this bill, there are some positives. First of all, the acknowledgement that premium cigars are different, the defining characteristic of that is we are finally being acknowledged as a different entity, a different type of product. We are not being lumped in with dip. We are not being lumped in with vape. Thank goodness.
We're not in an appropriations bill. I think that's important. This was not an appropriations bill.
And this is not in what we've seen in years past with language mentioned in budgets about exemption, you know, that always gets pulled at the 11th hour and never actually makes the final cut. This is completely different. This is actually a piece of legislation that acknowledges that premium cigars are different. So I think that is an important and a positive defining moment for our industry. So I have to start with that.
Right.
To be perfectly honest, though, the $12 price point presents so many concerns. First of all, the $12 price point, again, Coop, illustrates the absolutely ignorant disregard for people's understanding of what the premium cigar industry is. And it presents so many problems, and I'll start with just a few of the obvious. First of all, how do you define you cannot define a premium cigar on price alone, simply because now let's even talk about what is a $12 cigar. A $12 cigar, Coop, to you in North Carolina is different to a $12 cigar here for me in Texas. It's certainly different for a $12 cigar for Aaron in California.
And New York, yeah.
New York, Ohio, which has really strict taxation, Arkansas, which is incredibly difficult. These present a lot of different problems because of the way the taxation is structured from state to state on tobacco. There is no clear line of delineation of what a $12 cigar is. So again, this is another ignorant disregard to what the industry actually is and the problems that are presented to anyone who manufactures, distributes, or sells these products. And so the $12 price point can't be met, you know, with open arms and wild adulation because it is missing its fundamental truth that that's an illusion. The $12 price point is an illusion because what becomes hit? So if this were to pass and there is a lot of opinion both on our side of the aisle, on multiple sides of the aisle, that this will not pass. And even if it does pass,
I think it has more light. Yeah, go ahead.
Even if it passes the House, which it stands a chance, but more than likely from opinions that I've heard, politically, it won't pass the Senate because there's a man named Mitch McConnell that will ensure that this does not pass. But I actually had a conversation with PCA Director Scott Pierce earlier tonight. Now, most of the conversation was actually off the record, but
is he actually okay? I won't get sarcastic. Go ahead.
No, so much of the conversation was off the record, but one of the things that was on the record was what I just kind of mentioned was that the industry is working with this. While they did see the positive points, as I just mentioned, they are working towards, educating lawmakers into the trouble that this $12 price point creates. And so, again, I think that the impression that I got, this wasn't any words taken from Director Pierce, but the impression that I got was that they felt the same way that I did. They felt relief in the sense that it was a positive recognition of what the premium cigar is different. Premium cigar industry is different, but there's still a lot of work to be done, and they are actually working to educate further so that they can create more momentum. But this is certainly a good stepping stone to step on, and I couldn't agree more with that. So it was a very positive conversation with the director, and I'm optimistic at their efforts in terms of what their plans are and what the stance that they're taking with moving forward on that. So the problem is that the $12 price point creates a lot of issues. So we're the only part of the tobacco industry. This is an interesting right. Observation. We're the only one that is still being considered a danger to children. And that's where the $12 price point actually comes in. I'm going to mispronounce his name, but the congressman who's been in office from New Jersey.
Frank Pallone,
who is an adamant anti-tobacconist. He's very anti-tobacco.
And he's a powerful congressman. Just keep that in mind. He's got a lot of power, this guy.
He's been in office since the late 80s.
Yep, I remember I was in Rutgers when he got elected in my district. Since the time
I was a child, that's how long he's been in office. So well before I was able legal age to smoke. And his concern is still that of the anti-tobacco lobby, which is that, you know, access to children. And so he was the one that was actually at the forefront of pushing this price point to the as the caveat. Now, first of all, we should also applaud the lawmakers that are on our side. You know, Kathy Castor and again, forgive me, I cannot pronounce the other one's name. Help me out here, Coop, please.
I'm trying to remember who the other one is.
This is terrible.
I drew a complete blank.
Two congressmen that are in our corner about it were able to actually push this point and to push for premium cigar exemption in this regard. So they made great ground on our behalf, and I don't want to belittle that, even though I cannot remember the second one's name. But Kat Caster's leading that charge.
Adana Shahala.
Shahala, thank you.
Down at LT down the Bronx.
Yes, that's right. Both of them. Great relationship with of course Drew Newman, who's just doing amazing things for our industry with his position with JC Newman, his background as an attorney. He's doing a fabulous job. Certainly needs to be applauded. But
what a job they're doing communicating, by the way,
Jason. Absolutely. Yes. So
they deserve, yeah. I mean,
hats off.
Yeah.
But again, Frank Pallone's position on the $12 price point has nothing to do with cigars themselves. It has to do with, again, access to children. So he feels like the magic number now made by making this $12 will keep this somehow out of the hands of children, which we've been screaming at the top of our lungs since the FDA's study. FDA-funded study, as I get on my soapbox and repeat for the thousandth time on the show, the FDA-funded study that clearly defined that premium cigars are not finding their way into the hands of children. They are not being consumed by minors. And yet, here we are still being presented with a law that is in some ways very positive towards our industry, but very negatively reflecting it because they want to keep it away from children by putting this $12 price point on a cigar. So it's I think this is a huge step for someone who's so anti-tobacco and Frank Pallone to concede that we are in fact different, and for even allowing the possibility for us to exist separately but within the confines of the tobacco industry, and him not being, you know, like some extremists, to be like, I just completely abolish tobacco altogether. You know, this allows an open, I would say a window, you know, a window into Frank Pallone's consciousness to get him to understand what it is. So I think there is a lot of positives to take. There is still a lot of work to be done, and I'm feeling very optimistic. For once, I'm feeling optimistic about what we can do. But this was a silver lining victory. This was a moral victory for the cigar industry. I believe that.
So I had a conversation with someone after the Thursday show. Let me ask a question. So let's say this bill becomes to law. True or false, question for you. There will be no more cigars sold on the market under $12. True or false?
False.
Because you have predicate.
Predicate for one.
Right.
Two, the companies that have the money to do so. But we're talking about, for instance, okay, this morning I was smoking a Farce Maduro Petite Corona from Matt Booth Room 101, which is a sub $10 cigar. It's $7 and change, I believe, in Texas. Again, could be a different price in North Carolina. Definitely a different price in California. I'm going to keep emphasizing that. Could be a $12 cigar in California. but that cigar doesn't exist anymore. I think. I'm afraid it wouldn't be. I you know.
Just raise it to $12.
But yeah, I could get raised to $12. So that's.
I think you have guys who are in the $10 to $11 price point, and I've talked to a couple already. They're like, okay, we'll sell cigars for $12. And then you have a lot of companies that have a large library of predicate stuff that's going to continue to be sold as predicate, right? This is not a doomsday scenario. I'm not defending this. This is not a good scenario. It's a bad scenario that's happening, right? Mm-hmm. But it's not. I think the cigar industry, I don't know who actually made this call. I don't know if it was a congressperson who said, we're going to put this in there, and cigar industry, you live with it, or if there were people in the industry pushing the Congress people for this, right? I could tell you that, you know, Glenn Loop's reaction was very candid on this. This is not, they're hoping to still get this out of there.
Of course.
I applaud Glenn Loop for making that, for that statement, by the way.
Drew Newman had some similar sentiments.
They had no choice, right? I think this bill had a little more legs than people thought, though. Right, I think there was some fear with that too. I think there were people thought that this bill had more co-sponsors. How does this bill have more co-sponsors? I shouldn't say this. This bill had more co-sponsors than the exemption bill in the House. It was getting support.
Mm-hmm.
So there was definitely, and it was getting support from key people there. So I think basically the cigar industry was forced to play Russian roulette, and now they're going to have to see what happens if this thing actually goes through or not. You know, I don't think what if they would, you know, if they would have said no, you would have had, they weren't in, there was a no-win situation here. Because if they would have said no, it could have had, then if this thing actually ended up passing, there's a lot of I told you so's. We should have taken it. So I think you take it, right? I hate settling. You know how my feelings are settling, but I don't think they had, I think they had a choice. And hopefully now they could, the fact that they've made some headway in the definition of a premium cigar, maybe they can make some more headway over the next few months right now.
I think that's the idealistic hope.
Right.
But I think that there's an idealistic opportunity too, because I think, like I said, the statement has been made, Coop. The statement has been made. The premium cigars are different.
It's the first time it's not an appropriations bill. And I think that's significant because appropriations bills have a lot of other components to it where cigars are more of a rounding error. Here I'd say it's not quite a rounding error. It's not the big crux of this bill, but it's still to a point where I think it's not quite as bad, right? And you know, again, this was a case where for years we've been saying the problem is we've been lumped in with everything else. Here was a case where we were able to unlump ourselves for the first time.
100%, 100%. Yep. I think there's positives to be taken. There's a lot of concern still. Don't want to make light of it. In fact, pretty upset about this $12 price point, even though it doesn't sound like I am. I just think the conceding point of actually acknowledging the industry for what it is, which is something clearly different, you know, is I beat the dead horse here.
Yeah.
Is something that should be noted.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm not doing handstands. I'm not doing backflips yet. But it is the first time that we've seen some positive headway in the legislative circle. And so, we will continue to support the industry, and the efforts that organizations like, CRA and PCA continue to make in trying to educate our lawmakers, and hopefully get some of these more ignorant points wiped off the books, or at least corrected to something a little bit more less obtuse, I guess, is what I'm kind of going at.
Yeah. You know, so I'll say this. I do believe PCA is doing a lot of work behind the scenes on this.
Mm-hmm.
But they have done an atrocious job at communicating with their retailers who are their main members. And I think they've done an atrocious job at a lot with that, right? There's been how is there no communication from the PCA to your retailers? And your retailers really need to be the ones educated on this. There's a lot of retailers who don't understand this, trust me. And I'm not knocking them. It's just
there's a lot of consumers that still don't understand the concern. You know, this was brought up a couple weeks ago on your show, Coop, that there are people sitting in cigar shops all around this country, regulars,
right.
That have absolutely no clue or very little clue about the condition. You know, it was Erik Guttormson who made this.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
No, he made this comment that there are people in this country that are regulars, right, that are regular cigar smokers, that are in their shop every day, that have very little knowledge of any of the concern of the possibility of ending their one of their most cherished hobbies and pastimes.
Yeah. So no, you're 100% right. But I think that they have got. I mean, I just really feel they've done a very bad job with this, and now we're in react mode again. Like, if there were alerts put out to get people to contact your congressman, right? And I know people are sick of contacting your congressman, but you know what? This was a dangerous piece of legislation, and they have the infrastructure to put the alert out. I would have wrote the alert in 5 minutes and probably could have had them load that into the system. How they're not doing that, I don't. And here's the other thing. There are things in that – I'm not sure what the status of flavored tobacco is. You and I talked about how the industry has basically given up the fight on tobacco 21 until the cows come home, right?
Yeah.
Have they done much with flavored tobacco? They avoided that like the plague. They don't want to talk about it.
I think they conceded that point years ago, Coop.
But, yeah, I mean, I think they did. And I think that's why Drew Estate now has their own lobbyist with Swisher. I think that's exactly what's happening. But, I mean, I'm just very...
Do you blame Drew Estate?
No, right? No, but I think as PCA, retailers sell a lot of flavored tobacco. They sell a lot of flavored tobacco. And you are not... I mean, I could tell you when the whole thing happened in Los Angeles, there were retailers who were irate that there was no support from the trade organizations on this. They got no one really to fight for them. It went through the LA County Board of Supervisors on that.
But Coop, I'll echo my sentiments from a few weeks ago, actually a couple months ago at this time. You know, when we were talking about, you know, PCA's efforts in terms of communicating with the retailers and everything. No one will acknowledge that there's never a good time for things like this, but this is also a bad time as they're kind of going through a relaunch. They're trying to build this educational hub that they've been talking about. And so I would say that their communication with the retailers, it has been consistent. You can say lacking, you can say atrocious, as you used. It's been consistent at this point. It's something they need to get better at, for sure. We can all be better. But I don't think it hasn't gone out of its way to be worse. I think it's consistent.
It doesn't make it okay. Yeah, I'll agree with you that.
This has been the problem though. This has been the problem from the early days of the fight though, was, you know, getting the petition signed and everything was still kind of like people who didn't know what they were signing and we were just faxing these petitions into like
every... And people got tired. I get it. Yeah. And
so
I think we did a bad job as an industry of emphasizing the importance of these petitions.
No, 100%. And again, they're the organization, right? So, I mean, they're at the center of this. And do they need to get better at the communication? Absolutely. I think that there is ample opportunity for them to do so. Again, the timing couldn't be worse in that regard, as they're trying to restructure their infrastructure. They're trying to recenter their efforts into this educational aspect of which they're trying to really push. And I think that that's evident. It just needs to move faster. Is there a magic button? Is there a perfect elixir that I or any one of us could point to? I don't know if there is, but you know, I guess the lackluster phrase is be better, right? But just be better. And, you know, and I think that that's something that we just continue to emphasize, is like, just keep on it, you know, keep emphasizing communication, keep emphasizing relationships. And that they're going to get it right. They're going to have to get it right, or else, you know, this is all for nothing. It's all for nothing.
Let's take the cigar con debacle out of the equation. Just put that aside. Forget it even happens. Right? They got up and they talked about making PCA and a full service organization.
Right?
Have they even come close to being a full service organization?
No, but how many months are we into this at this point?
Have they taken baby steps? I expect something. I mean, there's nothing that I've seen. Like you nailed it with what you said a few minutes ago. It's been status quo. There's nothing that's changed. Now, I'll give him a fair shot for 2020. But I mean, like I said, I'm taking the cigar con piece out of that. There's just been basic blocking and tackling that I just feel they're not communicating. And I understand that you can't communicate about every meeting you have. But I'm talking about they have the infrastructure to do these alerts with cigaraction.org. That these things needed to be, people needed to be educated. And frankly, if you would include Half Wheel and Cigar Coop in your news feed, right? Even if you don't want to like put something out there, you have news sources. Half Wheel, no one does a better job at legislation than them, right?
They cover it incredibly well.
You could have a link in your news feed, but you don't want them in there. You took all online media out of there, right? I'm being honest here. There's nothing they had to do with just put those links back in for Cigar Coop and Half Wheel, Cigar Authority, whatever. And people can get that news without even you having to lift a finger. You have the infrastructure in there. You just got to put us in there as a feed source. They don't want to do that.
I think that's great feedback, and I think that that's something that they would probably be open to.
Yeah, I'm going to give them some more constructive feedback on that, but to me, I think, like I said, I think they need to do I think CRA's actually done a better job this year than I've seen in a while. I'll give Glenn Loop a lot of credit on that and the team at CRA. I think they've been a little better at stuff like this right now. And maybe that's because they're going through a change, PCA. So
I think CRA has had a better year than
I think so too.
I will give them that.
Yeah.
We've had Director Loop on, you know, three times on the show, and I beat him.
And he still comes back.
And I beat him up quite a bit, and not unnecessarily. I think he appreciates it and understands where we're coming from, but he and the organization of CRA have made, I think, a really great effort this year.
Let's give credit to them as well as all the three trade organizations. I'm beating up on PCA a bit, but there was stuff PCA worked behind the scenes with this 2339. And I think they do deserve credit. Like, obviously there's something happening behind the scenes that are getting to the politicians. So,
they're doing some great educational pieces. I mean, they did that really well. They did that really great publicized, effort when they had lawmakers and representatives of lawmakers together when Pete Johnson presented the hand-rolled film.
You think they did a good job promoting that?
To the people that they were promoting in the sense that they were getting in front of the right, they were getting in front of the right people, and they were getting the right message in front of those people.
Okay. All right. I'll give you that point. Yes. It was maybe quality over quantity there. Yes.
I guess my counterpoint to that is, Coop, is like, what would you have had them do? Like, you know, by publicizing it to the public, hey, we're going to do this. Would that, you know, other than this, us chanting rah, rah in the corner, I mean, what else could we have done as a consumer public or a public?
I would have been blasting that on social media every single day. For starters, right? They did videotape part of it, or I'll give them that, but I would have been blasting this stuff out. I go back to what Protocol Cigars, why is Protocol Cigars and RomaCraft so successful, right? Because every day there's something on social media, and every day people are on social media. Every day I'd be doing this. And I think someone can do it. How long does it take to put a Facebook post up?
No, you're right about that, Coop. But let's be honest here. PCA is not Protocol, and PCA is not RomaCraft. And with all due respect to those fantastic brands and the amazing job that they do at marketing their own product, that's marketing their own product. That's
okay,
not representing an entire industry.
Yeah, but I mean, instead of posting a picture of a Cuban cigar like they did a few months ago,
I'm
just saying. I mean,
bad call.
I think. Here's the thing. What I'm saying, it's not necessarily a bad call. I think I understand what they were trying.
I'll say it was a bad call.
It was a bad. They had the wrong thing in the picture. Okay, but I think the concept of putting out something promoting cigars, I didn't think that was a bad thing. It was just you got to put a Cuban in. You don't put a Cuban in there,
right?
I mean, it was just, and I got so. I think they need to be, maybe something's going to happen with these committees that are happening right now. So we'll give it a shot there and see. But restore online media to restore. And if you're listening to this show, let PCA, tell PCA you want online media back in that news feed.
I agree. If you want, listen, I think the important thing is for them to be self-reflective in that regard, because if they're clearly seeing that this isn't a priority for them, or they're not able to prioritize because they are stretched so thin. And I think that's a realistic understanding of what they're dealing with. Because, you know, as they're trying to restructure, as they're trying to rebrand, as they're trying to do this and try to do that, there's nothing wrong with asking for a little bit of help.
No, I think they're doing that with the committees, though, too. So I think they're, you know, I want to just see what happens with the, and it's not just committees for the trade show. There's other committees that they're looking at. I think that, you know, I can hopefully, committees are a tough thing to manage, though. But if they can get somewhere with some of those, I think it would be very good.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think social media can be improved by them and stuff. It's a tool that they haven't truly tapped into to 100% of its worth. I think that's worth saying. But I think there's time for them to do that.
I agree with you on that.
So the. Yeah, I think there's just a lot. There's a lot of, you know, I reflect back on our interviews with Director Loop quite a bit, and there's a lot of, you know, a lot of his answers are no comment, not because he's being truculent or anything like that, and we're trying to be vague on purpose or being smug or anything like that. There's a lot of things he can't comment on, and so I think a lot of the stuff that PCA is working on, they can't necessarily make public. And or that could actually even be a detriment. I mean, consider this. Let's say PCA gains an audience with Frank Pallone, for example, and they publicize it, right? And you know, if they push it out there too much on the public, that puts a lot of pressure on Frank Pallone. And you know, historically speaking, again, he's been anti-tobacco, right? Yeah, you know, he doesn't want to be seen as now, you know, a flip-flopper or, you know, changing pace, especially since he's probably backed by, you know, tobacco-free kids and some other anti-tobacco lobbies. I mean, that puts his own political position in danger too. And so I think that while that, you know, boo-hoo, that's not necessarily our concern, I think we still need to be conscious of that. I mean, wouldn't you agree?
Yeah.
So I think they have to be, there's a lot of things where they have to be careful, and it's, politics is such a tricky thing, and the political game is something that I, you know, that even the people fully involved with it, I think even Director Loop would probably admit, you know, in private necessarily, that he even doesn't understand a lot of the tricks of the trade, just because it is so vast. And that's not a knock. And yes, that is his job, and that's not a knock on Director Loop. I'm just saying that the political game is such a tricky, you know, platform that you just have to be incredibly smart, incredibly crafty, and incredibly careful about the way that you push news to the public. So
yeah, but I think they need. Yeah, I really think, you know.
But be better, right? But be better.
Yeah, yeah. I totally agree with that.
I'm gonna light up another one of these phrases.
Okay. Yeah, I actually already did. I didn't want to write the Devlin's up because my palate was already probably shot, and I didn't want to do that. So I want to smoke that clean. But definitely this Freya 12. You need to check them out. This
money.
This is really good.
It's money.
Yeah. What we should do? Let's take a break. Another commercial break. We have. There's two quick hits. I'm gonna audible a third one at you, which I'll explain to you if that's okay.
That's fine.
Okay. So you want me to do this one or you?
I got it.
Okay.
So with just over a decade of ownership, Michael's Tobacco has become the premier tobacconist for Dallas-Fort Worth metro area and cigar patrons the world over. With two convenient locations in Euless, just a quick jaunt from the DFW airport, in Keller, Texas, Michael's Tobacco stands as a beacon for the Texas cigar retailer and Texas cigar retailers. Michael's was the very first cigar lounge in the state of Texas to add a full bar to its list of ever-growing accommodations. Proprietor Mike Peacock is a former PCA board member and has now made Michael's a family affair, by having his son Bob join the ownership force. Under general manager and master storyteller Tracy Spence's leadership at Michaels, his self-proclaimed greatest accomplishment has been assembling, quote, the greatest team in the cigar retail business, unquote, as well as build some of the finest relationships with the industry's most respected individuals. Inventory director Jason Fields handles and maintains two of the area's proudest humidors, containing premium cigars for everyone from the everyday smoker to the most ardent collector of rare puros. Under Mike, Bob, Tracy, and Jason's example, they have enlisted a staff of Kevin, Austin, myself, Joe, Solace, Brandon, and now Kyle that collectively boast over 90 years of combined industry experience. Together, they have brought a true and blessed mainstay to their respective communities. With you, whether you are celebrating an anniversary, birthday, hole-in-one, or just a desire to relax, Michael's Tobacco will have the perfect cigar waiting for you with an exquisite beverage pairing and lively conversation. Visit the website, michaelstobacco.com, for more details and a calendar of upcoming events. Michael's Tobacco, not just the cigar shop, but the perfect blend of Texas hospitality and the days of yore.
Yep. Want to thank our sponsor, Michael's Tobacco. Want to mention also our sponsor on the Thursday show, Tailored Smoke. I'm wearing a shirt. They just announced their second store is opening in the Concord region of North Carolina. And for folks who live in, the Charlotte area, the city of Concord is just northeast of the city. It's the home of the Charlotte Motor Speedway. And it is probably an area that is in dire need of a premium cigar store. So, if you're living in that area, I mean, I'm excited about seeing something like that happen up there.
Congrats to our friends at Tailored Smoke, man. Second location. That's beautiful.
Yep. Yep. So they're looking to target it, probably by the beginning of the year. And I think they're on target for that too. They've been very, this is one of these projects that seems to be hitting all the dates. So, but you never know what could happen, but I think they're dope. They were trying to get it before, Black Friday. I knew that was going to be a stretch, but I think this is pretty reasonable. And they did a good job by that.
Congrats to them.
Yep. So a couple of quick hits. You have a couple of these in here, and then I added a third one, which I'll give you the background on. Let's start off first with, we've been talking about women in the industry. And you mentioned this topic, and I know you want to talk a little about it. Sarah Santos was named the new, head of Cigars International last week.
Yeah, this is a big story because this is a very big position with a very big company that has a prominent place in our industry, and I think that to our point from our last segment, Coop, as we want to garner more acceptance in not just politically but just in society in general, it's important to be diverse. And as this show's esteemed guest list, notwithstanding, there are many amazing women in this industry, but the representation necessarily is still a fraction of what's truly represented. So I think when Cigars International made this decision, Cigars International and STG made this decision to add Sarah as a prominent person in their organization and naming her to this position, I think it was a really, really, really strong move for them. She's proven herself as a strong leader, within the industry, and it's really, really fantastic to see an organization such as this, recognizing the need for diversity and appointing a person like with Sarah's, not only experience but leadership ability and caliber to such a prestigious position. So I was really excited to see it. She of course succeeds Craig Reynolds, who was around since I believe quite a long time, almost a decade since not quite a decade, but 2011 I believe is when he was brought on board.
Right.
And he's actually retiring, so he wasn't let go or he didn't move to a different position in the business. He's actually just leaving the industry in the form of retirement. So this is a great thing for Ms. Santos. Cigars International, most people just think of it as just the website and, of course, the brick-and-mortar retailers. Her position will actually oversee quite a lot of a huge catalog and operation. Not just there's four brick-and-mortar stores, but also keep in mind that Cigars International operates cigar.com, cigarbid.com, pipesandcigars.com, And as we've covered on the show, and you didn't quite break the story, but you nearly did in the Dominican Republic when we were there.
I didn't have tin can on the internet. Yeah.
Yeah. Thompson Cigar is under her portfolio as well. So they're actually planning additional launches of two more brick and mortar locations. Another one here in my home state of Texas and another one in Florida. And then you also have to consider that
that place in Hamburg is fantastic. I went there in March. I'll be going there for sure when I go back up to New York around New Year's. That's an amazing place. That place they have in Hamburg, which is just north, about probably an hour north of Philadelphia, and probably about 2 hours west of New York City.
I still need to get to the original Bethlehem location.
Oh, it's a great place. I've been to the originals. They have a charm to them. But yeah, they have this two-story place, and you go in there. Wow, you want to talk about a catalog of brands? They're gonna be around a long time. General is gonna have no problem doing releases because they got plenty of grandfathered stuff in there. You know. I'll say this about, I don't know Craig Reynolds. We interviewed him on KMA. He was probably one of the most candid interviews I ever heard. I don't know him, but everything I've heard about him and heard him say, this guy's an absolute gentleman. I think he's a guy who didn't probably get a lot of notoriety because he worked for Big Bad Cigars International. And I get it, right? But he's an actual class act from everywhere I've seen. I mean, he was very transparent when they had all their internet problems a couple years ago. I mean, you had to be like that. And he's extremely – so I think Sarah's got some big shoes to fill, but I think sure. It's a great opportunity for her there.
Yeah, I'm excited to see this new chapter of Cigars International, not just because she's a woman, but just because, you know, Craig was there for a long time. And you know, when you have someone in position for a long time, there's a great amount of consistency, which we don't see a lot in this industry, right?
Yeah.
You know, reps change constantly. You know, brand ambassadors change a little bit. You know, great people in this industry, like the husband of our esteemed guest earlier, Jose Blanco, has moved around as well. So I mean, with moving parts ever changing in this industry, you know, and you have someone consistently at the helm, like the stature of Craig Reynolds, it can certainly be viewed as a positive. So I'm really excited to see the next chapter of what this will bring and what Sarah plans to bring to the industry in general. I wish her nothing but success. While she is in charge of a direct competitor, I do work for a retailer here in Texas. I wish her success, but hopefully not too much.
Too much. I would say let them keep their catalog brands, and you guys focus on what you guys do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Just, and look, if you go to Michael's, it's a completely different store.
Absolutely. Yeah. Two different type of experiences.
Yeah, it's a very different experience, and boy, that's a great store. I just can't wait to get back there. Michael's, that is. Both stores are great, but. Yeah, definitely enjoyed myself that night there. Yeah, thanks for the soda you treated me to that night, too.
You're welcome, sir.
You put it on your tab. They said, put it on Bear's tab.
It was a struggle, but I managed to pick it up my next shift, yeah. The Peacock family has done an outstanding job. It's a privilege to work for them, and they have a great – I can't say enough about them. They're an amazing family.
Yeah.
And it's a great opportunity. I love going to, when you enjoy what you do, you never work a day in your life, as the saying goes.
Yep. Agree. All right, let's go to this next topic. Casa Cuevas Cigars. I think everyone knew the news. A friend of the show, Gabriel Alvarez, resigned from the company a couple weeks ago.
This was something that we all saw, you know, the press release that came out Gabe's been a personal friend of ours for a long time.
Yep.
He's been on the show. He's been on my show. Wish Gabe nothing but the best. As he goes forward and he's done so much in this industry, man. He's brought brands, unknown brands, and as we've often commented, he's left the brand in a better standing than it was when he got there. And
yeah.
I think that reputation hasn't changed at all. I think Casa Cuevas has has made incredible ground from, you know, the time he started with him. They weren't an attendee at the trade show, and last year they put on an amazing presentation with their booth and their new offerings. And, you know, he was certainly a huge part of that. And so, wish Gabe nothing but the best. And, you know, Casa Cuevas is going to continue to thrive as well under the new direction that they go in as they fill the shoes that Gabe leaves open. Again, as I mentioned earlier, with so many changes in this industry, you kind of get used to the changing of the guards and everything, so to speak. But wishing obviously both parties nothing but the best, and we know that both of them will end up doing great things. Really excited.
I agree. This is an unconfirmed report. But it, from what I'm hearing, and I still have to talk to Luis about this. But from everything I'm hearing, it appears that Luis's son Alec is going to be starting. They're going to start to groom him to eventually take that role. Phil Gabe. That's unconfirmed, but like I said, there's some pretty good sources. They haven't released a press release on that. He's young, so I mean, I assume they're not just going to throw the whole thing to him right away. But that is a family-run company, so it makes a lot of sense. And I think, you know, certainly Gabriel got the startup of that going with Luis, and maybe now it's a good hands for the Cuevas family to bring Alec in on that.
I had the privilege of meeting Alec for the first time at not this past year's trade show, but the year before. He spent some time in retail. He worked in retail.
Yep.
And this guy is a – this guy is a sponge.
He's exceptional.
He's exceptionally bright, very sharp, great palate. From my conversations with him, an understanding of tobacco that, you know, frankly, is a generation ahead of his age, you know,
right.
I was very, you know, from professionally speaking, I was very impressed with him.
I spent some time with him in Miami back in September when I visited Casa Cuevas. So I agree. I think I'm totally on board. He's young, but mm-hmm. at the same time, you mentioned Sponge, and I can see him really learning. I've seen him being groomed for things in that company. So I think they're taking an approach similar to what maybe Nick Perdomo took with his son. You know, what Eric's doing with Eric Jr.
Yeah, I was going to say the Espinoza.
And Alan Rubin's doing with his sons. So mm-hmm. So I think you're seeing that, start to happen right now.
I think it's just great for multi-generations to get involved in business. On so many levels, this is a huge positive for Casa Cuevas. This is something that I spoke with Luis about in an interview and as well on my show, and we mentioned it, I believe, on our interview with him too, Coop. That's the dream, right?
Yep.
For these fathers to hand something off to the next generation or build something for the future, and they're certainly doing that at Casa Cuevas, and it's great to hear, great to see, and like you said, unconfirmed, but one thing's for sure, I think that Alec's future is bright in this business. Like I said, I was just very impressed with that young man.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, as far as Gabriel goes, he's done a lot for the shows I've been involved with, the brands I've been involved with, the media brands, both on Stogie Geeks and here. So I've gotten nothing but professional and exemplary support from Gabriel. He's a big part of the success, I think, of what we've had. We've been good partners with Casa Cuevas for a while. Gabriel was one of our first guests on. I think he was the first guest we had on Special Edition, if I'm not mistaken, when we brought him on that day.
I believe that's correct.
I think it was number three, episode three. It was three or four. So, I mean, I wish Gabriel nothing but the best. He's a good man. It's unfortunate he's not there. But like I said, I think he will be a better person, wherever he goes. So I think he'll do the professionalism and my friendship with him will never change with that.
I concur with that and completely agree.
Yeah. Okay, this last one. You may not be familiar with this, right?
Throw me the curveball, Coop. Here we go.
Okay, this is the curveball I do. Have you heard of this place called Hat City Ale House in Danbury, Connecticut? Have you seen what's going on up there?
I've vaguely heard the name. I don't know. I don't know what's okay. going on.
So I'm a little closer to this because this is a friend of mine who's involved. I probably should have given this some airtime on a special edition show before. I think it's time to do it. So Hat City Ale House is a place run by a friend of mine, Kevin Page, out of Danbury, Connecticut. Kevin's a retailer with Butthead's Tobacco Emporia. I consider Kevin one of my closest friends in the industry. He actually bought a cigar smoker from Barry Stein. He still has it, but he's not active with it anymore. He's a forward-thinking guy, and he's you know a good retailer. He's a really good retailer. He has had a series of retail stores in Danbury, and he had an opportunity to open up a cigar bar in downtown Danbury called Hat City Ale House. And he got a permit to have smoking and alcohol in the place. And he was very excited about this place opening. And he had a ribbon cutting ceremony even to open up the place. And the mayor of Danbury, a guy by the name of Mark Boughton, the mayor of Danbury, attended that ribbon cutting ceremony.
Right.
And basically, within I want to say a week or two, the permit for the allowed smoking in the bar was yanked by the city of Danbury, and the mayor has been absolutely refusing to meet with Kevin on Hat City Ale House, and it's been it's been getting a lot of publicity right now. The mayor's saying that this is a state law, that there's some state law that's not allowing for the exemption, and he's pushing them to the state. But here's my issue with this, Bear. First of all, how in the world does Kevin spends a lot of money getting this bar open, right? It's significantly impacting his bottom line that he can't have smoking there anymore. And the mayor just refuses to even talk to this man after you attended I think that's absolutely deplorable. And on top of that, where's the mayor saying, hey, I'm going to help you out. I'm going to get some of the state people involved. He hasn't done that. And Kevin's been resorting to a lot of social media push right now because his business is on the line. And if you've seen this, Jose Blanco's been very vocal on this. Mike Bellady has been very vocal on this. A lot of people in the industry have been very vocal. I think this is terrible what they're doing to Kevin. And if you're in the Danbury, Connecticut area, you need to be all over this right now.
Now that you mention it, Coop, I do remember seeing the picture of the mayor cutting the ribbon and then the story afterwards. Yeah. So, yes. Coop, I'm speechless. I'm appalled.
And this is the thing, you're trying to resurrect downtown Danbury business, right? How do you actually, again, how do you sit there as the mayor and just toss this away? I mean, there's just, isn't especially since you attended you were excited about it, how do you just like turn a 180 here? I mean, and I could guess what's happening. There's probably some anti-tobacco people that's driving this, I'm sure.
Sure.
But what an absolute disgraceful job by this mayor. I mean, I just can't. I can't fathom it.
I can't agree more. I mean, surely, if you're watching from Danbury, Connecticut, and you're a citizen of the city and this community, and if you know somebody who's a citizen of this community, I think that the considerable pressure needs to be brought to bear. You're not going to reelect this man.
I think he's willing to. I think he just got reelected. I think
he's willing to. No, listen. If he's that's atrocious.
Yeah.
You want to use that word from earlier. I'm going to pull that from you, Coop, and just use it. This is atrocious. How do you turn your back on a citizen of your community and pass the buck like that? That is you're absolutely right, Coop. That's absolutely
Yeah, he just horrible. Won a 10th term. He won a 10th term. I mean, after all of this, where is every – yeah.
Where are the citizens, man? I'm going to call that out too. Support your fellow citizen here.
This is,
I mean, like, it's not like Kevin is big bad corporate America. If you want to pull that card, we're like, oh, big business. He's not. He's one of you. He's putting his bank account on the line to employ people. Let's talk about the people who he employs. They're your neighbors. They're your fathers. They're your sons. They're your daughters. They're your cousins and nieces and neighbors and nephews. How could you elect this man? How could you let this happen? So this is just as despicable of a job. Man, now I'm getting fired up.
I knew this would go fire you up, and we should have probably talked about this. And we may want to get Kevin on the show, believe it or not. I think it actually is, we could talk about that. By the way, the mayor's invited on this show as well.
We're fair, Coop, right?
Yeah, we're fair. Absolutely. We'll give him, yeah.
Let's get them both on the show.
I tell you, I mean, I'm dead serious because this is, like I said, he runs an honest business. And by the way, he's kept the store open. He's kept the bar open, and it's killing his business right now. That's because the kind of guy Kevin is. That's the kind of guy Kevin is. He's going to fight this thing as much as he can. But look, he wants to keep that business going. He wants to keep the jobs going there.
Well, clearly we have two men. One's a man of his word, and one's not here.
Yeah.
And Kevin's obviously the former there.
Oh, he's, I agree.
Man of his word.
He is.
So he's doing his best to employ the people that he's entrusted with running his business. He's taking the responsibility that all good business owners, we're talking about the Peacock family that I work for earlier, the gentlemen, the folks that run and operate Tailored Smoke, they have a responsibility to their employees and to the livelihoods of their employees and everything. And Kevin's taking that responsibility wholeheartedly. Hats off to that man.
No, he is. He's a good man. I've gotten to know him over the last 8 or 9 years. I consider him by the way, we share the same birthday too. So we're kind of brothers from another mother, twins from another mother there. So I think we're almost the same age too, but yeah, we both have the same birthday. So, I feel horrible for him. What's going on here? I feel horrible. I think his story does need to be. And like I said, Kevin's a very, Kevin is involved in a lot of projects. He's a big time retailer too. He's not a small player, but it doesn't matter what his size is. How do you do this to one of your citizens?
It doesn't matter. It could be this. Coop, I have a very strong affinity and appreciation and respect for the small business owner, any small business owner, you know, whether I disagree with it or not, because truth be told, there are small businesses and there are industries that exist that are lawful and legal that I don't necessarily should exist, that I have, you know, strong opinions about. I won't necessarily go into that.
Yep.
But operating within legal guidelines, this man sought out, secured a permit to open a business. He invested his money, possibly some investors' money. So again, that's other responsibilities that he's taken on. Perhaps, don't want to speculate, but perhaps a loan from a bank. City, a community like Danbury, Connecticut, and a small business owner that's conscious like Kevin, probably from a local branch, maybe not necessarily the local bank, but maybe a local branch at least. So he's pumping money into this community and to this, you know, the local economy. And you yank it out from under this man?
Yeah.
Look, it's melodramatic as it sounds, and you know, as I pontificate over here, how dare you? How does that guy sleep at night? Send me that link. I'm sure I can find it, but send me that link when you think about it, because I'm blasting this up, man. This is bullshit.
Yeah, no, and like I said, I've been doing this, and you know, I want to get, like I said, I just, Kevin,
my apologies. I can't believe I missed that, sir.
No, apologies. That's probably my fault. I should have put this on your radar too, but a lot of this has really been getting steam over the last, probably since the late summer. I'm just flabbergasted, to be honest with you.
Why won't he meet with him? What's he afraid of?
He's saying there's nothing to talk about.
That's bullshit.
Which is ridiculous, which is completely.
There's something definitely to talk about.
Yeah, there's completely.
Listen, if you're going to tell the guy to fuck off, do it to his face.
Yeah. No,
seriously,
I totally.
Don't hide behind some ticky-tack law. Don't pass the buck. What happened to owning it, Coop? What happened to owning it?
Oh, I agree. I agree. I mean, it's just it's a complete I don't even know what else to say. It's terrible.
Let's say for the sake of argument for a moment that this is an oversight, right? This was an oversight by the mayor by approving or approving the permit, or, you know, if he even was involved in that process and he made a mistake. Man, what happened to owning it? Going to the governor's office and saying, listen, Your Honor, this is my community. This is one of my constituents. This is one of my citizens. I screwed up. I let this happen, but I stood there toe-to-toe with this man, and I honored and celebrated alongside with him as he tried to bring a legitimate business that would help stimulate my local economy, and I didn't realize that I was outside the purview of the law. Man, own that.
If you see my screen right now, that's a picture of the ribbon-cutting ceremony from August of last year when this happened. The guy in the on the right is Kevin, and the guy in the kind of the lighter blue shirt, not the lighter, the guy with the short sleeve blue shirt, that's the mayor, right? And you know, you can see this thing. He green lighted this. The mayor personally green lighted this project, by the way.
Oh, then that's completely on him, man. He needs to
this.
Own
is that. This is absolutely, yeah. This is, how do you do this? Like I said, it doesn't. How do you do this to anybody? Any one of your citizens who's trying to grow? You know, Kevin. You know, Kevin's, like I said, he's a Danbury guy. He's a Connecticut guy. You know, you want this guy to pick up and go, because you don't want to stick your neck out. I mean, you could be a hero. By the way, this mayor could be a hero doing this stuff.
Certainly. Yeah. I'm just appalled,
yeah.
Man.
And you know, I know it's a local so Danbury. You say, man, it's a local Danbury. No, this is something that.
No, it's bigger than that, Coop.
It's bigger than that. Exactly.
Listen, it doesn't matter if it happens in Danbury, Connecticut, or Chicago, Illinois, or Fort Worth, Texas, or Charlotte, North Carolina, or, you know, Fabens, Texas, which is a small town outside my hometown of El Paso, Texas, which is a blink and you'll miss it town. Like, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't.
I'm getting so angry about this. This is.
I'm glad you're getting angry. Kevin's gonna be happy. You just made a new friend with Kevin. But no, he, like I said, it's. I'm flabbergasted. This is politics. This is the, you know. This is politics at its worst. But Kevin's going to fight this thing till he can't fight it anymore. I can tell you that straight. This guy, you don't want to mess with Kevin. So.
I know we got friends in Connecticut. I know we got friends up in that particular area.
Yeah. And I got to say, some of the New England reps have really gotten behind him, the New England brand owners. Like I said, I know Mike Bellady posted something on the mayor's page, and it was taken down today. And you want to talk about Kevin is keeping this every day on social media. This is what I like about what he's doing. He is not taking his foot off the gas one day. He's constantly pinging me, I'll share it. I'll like it, or I'll comment on things like that. And it's a little tough for me sometimes to comment on media, but I've commented on this saying, this is just bad. This is just, forget cigars. This is just bad politics. And this guy's 10-term a mayor. It's a disgrace.
I don't know how long his term is, but if he wins re-election again,
I think there are maybe two-year terms up there. I guess, boo.
2021, man. Let's see if we can elect Kevin to mayor.
I would support Kevin for mayor. I support him for governor tomorrow. He's a real friend of mine. And I feel really, I know he's a friend of mine, but I feel bad if he wasn't a friend of mine on this.
He's not a friend of mine. This is just appalling. You said, this is politics at its worst. It has nothing to do. It has something to do with cigars, but it has something to do with small business, man. Yeah. And listen, you know, there's a look, if there was ever a bipartisan issue in this country, it's the small business owner, right?
This is small business. Yeah.
This is small business. Small business is the capitalistic political structure that actually straddles both party lines, right? You know, and receives wild support from both members on both sides of the aisle. So you can't even say, I don't know what political affiliation that this mayor has, and I frankly don't care. This is a nonpartisan issue, man. And listen, if you're worried about flack about anti-tobacco, you got the permit, man. It's a bar.
Yeah.
He's not letting kids in. What the fuck are you afraid of? God He's damn it. I'm getting angry again, Coop.
Right. And oh, by the way, there's another bar in the state that has an exemption already that he's pointed out. That's a very important point to make. So this is not like, yeah.
Shut up,
so this,
man.
This is where this is really getting ugly, yeah.
Oh, no, just over, man. This is over. Fire that guy. Impeach that mayor.
Yeah. You know,
whatever.
Here's the thing that even
– there's another bar that has an exemption in the state? Oh, yep. Come on, man.
Yeah, Al Shop, from what I heard, has it.
Come on.
But, yeah, to blame this on the state is just –
It's ticky-tack, man.
I am sorry. This is the and okay. Maybe Kevin does have to fight it with, but I'm sorry. This is just. I know I'm on my soapbox on this, but I don't know what else to say. And I'll give Jose Blanco a lot of credit. He's in the DR. He's posting stuff on this as well, commenting. He's constantly, you know, hey Mayor Barton, you have Jose Blanco, an industry legend, calling you out on this.
Shame.
Kevin's going to win this, though. He doesn't lose. I bet my money on Kevin still. But please, yeah, please, I would advise folks, take – because this, if it happens here, it can happen. If you're someone looking to open a store, this is a bad precedent here. And I'd be, you know, like I said, this is a guy who took his – runs an honest business. He put a lot into this, and it's a shame.
Just – Think about our friends at Tailored Smoke. If the city of Concord were to turn on them in this fashion, wouldn't you just be outraged?
Oh, absolutely.
This can happen anywhere.
It does. And like I said, even if someone green, and this is a man who green-lighted the project, keep it in mind. Green-lighted, thought it was a great idea, and just basically completely blindsided it.
This happened 2 days later or 2 weeks later?
Like 2 weeks, I don't remember the exact time frame. But let's put it was the same month. Let's just kind of say it was because they opened August last year. This has been over a year. He's been fighting this.
Kevin, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I'm sorry that I haven't been to know about this, man.
Yep.
What a shame.
Yep.
Unbelievable.
Yep. All right. Let's kind of wrap up the show. A few announcements I want to make. But let's kind of go with what's going on your end right now.
Coop, I am pleased. We got some good news.
Yeah.
I am pleased.
I saw a big announcement today.
I'm so pleased to announce that El Oso Fumar Takes just completed its 97th take. We were privileged to have Luciano Meirelles of Ace Prime Cigars as our guest this past Sunday. Check out the show. Great stuff.
Some big news was announced on that show, by the way, before anyone else. Yes.
An exclusive. We broke the news that the new MXS line will be headed and partnered with Adrian Gonzalez, former major leaguer, former Boston Red Sox, might add. Yes, sir. Adrian Gonzalez will be the new partner in the MXS line for Ace Prime Cigars. So capitalizing on the success from Dominique Wilkins and Tiago Splitter, they'll now have the MXS Adrian Gonzalez. And there actually is another project announced, not the details of, but it will
a
be
teaser. A, there was a teaser.
There was a teaser, so it'll be a MXS signature line, but a woman.
I've been sitting there trying to figure out who the woman is. Like, this was actually, I'd say teasers never work. This may be a good one, actually.
It's exciting, so, man. It's exciting. So great news coming out of Ace Prime.
Yep.
Really excited for our 98th take this coming Sunday. We're going to have the young, sharp, awesome, amazing half of the Alec and Bradley duo. Mr. Bradley Rubin will be on my show. I'm so excited.
There you go.
That.
Great guy. Great guy.
No show on the 8th of December, but that paves the way for my 99th take, who I am so pleased and so proud and privileged to welcome. None other than Mr. William Cooper. and Mr. Aaron Loomis on my show for the 15th for take 99. It's going to be awesome.
And we're not, by the way, like, it's going to be different, just so you know, because we're going to, Aaron and I are not going to be hosting this show.
No, I'm interviewing, man.
We're interviewees.
You're going to play my rules, baby. This is going to be good stuff.
So yeah. And it's kind of interesting. It's an interesting take to do, I think. So, I'm going to be on my best behavior not to host the show that night. So yeah, I'm just going to bet, you know, and I can do that. So, and I'm sure Aaron can too.
Good. I'm excited.
Yeah.
It's going to be good. But I've been saying the last few weeks on the road to 100, because I had great plans for my 100th show. I wanted to do something very special. We've had great anniversary shows. You know, it all started with Tim Wong, my very first take. Had Tim on for my first anniversary. Had him on a few weeks ago for my second anniversary. And that we couldn't imagine celebrating our trip around the sun with none other than the man who heads Pier 28 Cigars and does it just the industry mainstay that Tim is, and what he's done for this industry, people don't even know. And so I'm always pleased to have him. But I wanted to plan something a little special for Take 100. And so I was pleased to announce today that if you follow our Facebook page, El Oso Fumar, you probably saw that Mr. Pete Johnson of Fatuaje Cigars will be my guest for Take 100. I'm so excited. I'm so thrilled that he agreed to do this. Pete is one of those guys that is relentless in his support of the industry, what he does, not only his own brand.
He doesn't get the credit for what he supports with this industry too.
He doesn't.
Yeah.
And we're going to be talking everything from hand roll to Tatuaje. It's going to be an amazing show. I'm so excited to be bringing that to my audience. You got to tune in. It's going to be great. So Take 100 will be on the 22nd of December. Christmas come early. Pete Johnson, Take 100. So pumped.
Very good. Congratulations. By the way, I think you may be either the first or second fastest person to 100 shows in the podcast history of the cigar industry. Cigar Authority might have a little edge over you, but just because they don't miss a week.
I was going to say, they're the Iron Man, yeah.
They're the Iron Man, but yeah. So, but otherwise, I don't think – I actually did some tracking with that. I don't think anyone's done it in 2 years, 2 months else that I can think of. I was looking – because I do follow those stats as well.
Well, it's been a journey, and yeah. It wouldn't have existed without my audience. It wouldn't have existed without the amazing guests that I've had. And
yeah. Yeah, no, I think a good job with that as well. So yeah, look forward to that. That's a great way to wrap up the year. There's a lot happening on the coop side of the house. So let's kind of talk about that. We have no show on Thanksgiving. But next week, December 5th, we have the annual Cigar Aficionado Top 25 pregame show.
Yes.
It's always one of our biggest shows of the year. Aaron has done a tremendous job with the research this year.
Always.
So I have to actually start going through the data this weekend. I haven't done it yet. But I actually have Black Friday set aside to do that. So
will Bear call 100 the number one cigar of the year again? Tune in. Find out.
I saw Riste put a post up today in his group, like, who's going to get number one? All you got to do is tune into our show. We had every cigar in the top 25 mentioned last year. We were perfect. I'm not saying we picked every slot correctly, but we mentioned every cigar on that show that made the top 20. We didn't miss. The year before, we missed a couple. But last year, we had a perfect record with that, and including you picking number one. That's going to be primetime episode 119. The next day, December 6th, is the start of the Cigar Coop countdown of the top 30 cigars of the year. The original countdown.
Tis the season.
Cigar Coop did it before countdowns were cool. So that will go into January, where a cigar of the year will be crowned in January. And I'm going to throw one thing out that right now the list is basically done in terms of, but there is two cigars competing for one last slot, and they're going to be smoked in the next couple of days. So, but I think the rest of the list is done. It's the earliest I got the year list done because of some of the changes I put in with the timing. And there's going to be a lot of upset people that IPCBS cigars aren't on it this year. I'm sorry. I think it's the, you know, I'm just trying to make my own niche with that. Then we're going to have, we'll start talking about our primetime awards, which will happen also in January. So you're going to want to tune in for that. You know, like on Coop, we'll be doing, we'll start the nominations and the voting probably right after the CA show. Person of the year, I think, is going to be the most competitive category this year. When I was looking at it, I think it's going to be a tough cat. I think all the categories are very tough this year. I'll say that.
I think so, but I think there, they're going to be some great winners, man.
Yeah, I think so too. But person of the year is going to be, I think it's going to be a very tough vote this year. Not saying there weren't good persons, but I think there's some different spins to take this year on it than in previous years, which was a little more clear cut. So I have no, like in previous 2 years, I think we knew who would win the person of the year award or at least be a contender. This year, I think there's like, there may be 7 or 8 people.
Yeah, so. I've been, you know, gearing up for that. It's exciting, man. It's an exciting time.
Yep. And the last thing I'll mention, and this list is done. The decade list is complete. Cigar of the decade list, I'm calling it. That will be probably about a week after Cigar Coop's number one cigar is named. But it won't be a countdown. It will just be, I'm not going to put everyone through another countdown. But there will be a top 25 cigars of the decade. I've been working on this project for a year and a half. I started doing it about the middle of last year, and kind of structured it. And I'll go through some of the criteria that
I was going to say. You got to give us the criteria, Coop. People are going to be disappointed if there's no criteria.
Well, I'm going to be doing it. My Black Friday podcast will be back at midnight on Black Friday, and I'll be announcing what it is because I'm still kind of tidying.
Tune in.
Yeah, that's not a teaser. I just haven't articulated it all into words yet. But it's going to be a little different criteria than the countdown. So it's because it's a little different avenue. And it's going to be some surprises on that list. I'll tell you that. I'll tell you automatic criteria. If you were number one cigar of the year, you get an automatic entry onto the list.
Okay.
But doesn't mean you're 1 to 10 either.
No, that's fair.
Yeah, so that's an automatic. So there were 15 wild card slots.
So the Aladino Corojo Reserva will be somewhere in the top 25.
It will be somewhere in the top 25. Yes. Nice. The Robusto.
Crux du Connoisseur.
Crux du Connoisseur is on. Yes, they have gotten an automatic. Now, if you're number two, not automatic, and there are some cigars that were rated very high that didn't qualify for the list because of when they were smoked. But if they were released in the decade, they're still eligible. So there's some things that weren't on lists that are going to get in there.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah. So I'm pretty excited about that as well. So and then last programming note, we debuted Primetime Jukebox last Saturday. Dave Burke and I, we're doing a monthly show. No, thank you very much. I got more feedback. The biggest piece of feedback I got was my comments about Taylor Swift.
Well, like it was going to happen.
I was surprised. I thought people were going to say to me, I kind of said, I didn't say she doesn't belong in the Hall of Fame. I said, I'm going to cringe if she gets in the Hall of Fame. And I got pushback on that from a lot of people. I was surprised with that.
I mean, I disagree with you on that point. I think, you know, you don't necessarily have to be a fan of her music to recognize what she's done in the music business. She was a named artist of the decade by the, you know, the AMAs. And
look, if you want to basically take a cookie cutter formula and make every song sound the same, I guess you could be artist of the decade, right? If it's a good cookie cutter.
I don't think all of her songs sound the same.
They all got those hooks in it, you know? But, okay, I get it that maybe.
Isn't that what a good song has is a hook?
But every hook's the same.
How is every hook the same?
I'm not gonna try to sing her, but it's if you listen, like, da da da, you know. I'll prepare a response on that better. All right, but we did that show. We will be doing the Christmas and holiday music show in December, and it's Christmas and holiday music. We're calling it because I heard someone else say this. I think it was Dave Garofalo. Christmas is December 25th. We're all in it. But we're not going to exclude things that aren't Christmas season. So Dave Burke and I will be – we're actually putting that show together right now. And I was excited from the response on the show. It's not we don't do that show live, by the way. And we can't because of Dave in Australia is a little challenging. So we'll have the date announced for that probably next week for the December edition of Primetime Jukebox.
So excited.
Yeah. Well, all right. That is going to – okay, anything else? I know we kind of went a little at the end. That's going to wrap up anyway. Special edition number 63 into the annals of history for this Tuesday, November 26th, now Wednesday, November 27th on the East Coast. We'll see everybody a week from Thursday for the big CA Top 25 show. Have a great night, everybody.
We'll see you next time.
And thanks for everyone who tuned in for the whole show. Appreciate it as well. And everyone tuned in for part of it even.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.